Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, this is a fascinating time, and I've said this a bunch of times before, but this is a fascinating time to be alive, to be in this country, to be watching everything that's happening. This is a pivotal moment. You know, there's certain times that we look to, our founding, the Civil War, you know, World War II, the Depression, just certain times in our history, civil rights movement, that are pivotal times. And this is one of those times. This is the first time we've had a rogue government, a coup, take over our country and then screw everything up. You know, at least when the people pick the president, you know, they might do a bad job. Nowhere near as bad as what's going on right now. In fact, I got a poll that when Americans were asked the number one priority of the Biden administration, a term I use loosely, the majority said resign, quit, go away. You know, I've never seen that in a poll before. So it's quite fascinating. So a lot to do today. I want to talk about something, and I actually need to do a little on-air strategy with Gene here, because I'm trying to get our message out in terms of citizen legislation and see how we can be more effective. So I want to take up this up first. Then I've got the court case, the Fifth Circuit court case, which is fascinating. I've got some different articles and things to go over. We got a couple hours. So if you want to call in, this would be a good time to call in. 215-383-3832. This is sort of our morning hangout time to get the week going. And I'm looking for new reporters. In fact, this would be a good time for a new report. Now, next Monday, We're gonna have some fun here. Let me see if I can pull up the right name, just so I don't totally screw it up here. But we have new activists, and of course, we're always looking for new activists, new people that want to do really, really cool things. Chancey Terry, I probably mispronounced her name, Chancey Terry. She's gonna be on next Monday at 7 o'clock. And here's someone who wants to be an advocate, who wants to do all kinds of really amazing things with citizen legislation, with rallies, with activism in general, and doesn't quite know how to go about it. And I imagine a lot of you are in that same position. And we're just sort of getting to the point I'm leading to now, that I'm a little bit frustrated. And I'm a little bit frustrated with the rally that's going on tomorrow. I can't go because obviously I'll still be on the air. But even so, I'm not a big rally fan. And this is around Eugene's advice, because maybe I'm sort of missing the boat here. But, you know, this is going to sound really arrogant. I mean, it was kind of fun speaking at the last one, I got to tell you. And I was at the previous rally. But going, you know, schlepping all the way to Tallahassee to present something that usually is a done deal. The problem with legislation so many times is they work things out in the back rooms. And they figure out what they want to do. This is really between the governor and the state legislature, the special session we've got going here. So here's what's happening. So it starts today, and I don't know how much coverage there'll be of it. The governor DeSantis, who's doing a really incredible job right now. I'm really impressed with what he's doing. And so he had this proclamation October 29th calling for certain things in certain bills. He wanted the parental bill of rights strengthened, and he wanted some of the more odious, onerous provisions of the public health laws changed. And the biggest one, of course, is the fact that it allowed public health laws to vaccinate people by any means necessary. I mean, that was actually in the law. That's the language, by any means necessary. Well, that's a little bit too much authority for any government official, by any means necessary. And then, of course, they had law enforcement, you know, was duty-bound to enforce these things, too, by any means necessary. So, you know, you can imagine people having visions of, you know, wacko, you know, public health officials like Dr. Fascist, you know, tying people down, forcing vaccines in their arm. It's like some Twilight Zone episode, and go, okay, now you're one of us. You've been accepted into the body. You know, go forth and be well. It was from Demolition Man, right? And that's what people were really thinking. And I'm looking at this going, just because it's in the language doesn't mean they're going to use it, but doesn't mean they can't either. And so you got to really take a look at this stuff and go, okay, wait a minute. So I thought it would be an interesting challenge to write two new bills, one on those two sections, on Section 381, which is the public health laws, particularly a couple of the sections, you know, I think it's 01, 02, and 315. 315 is the bad one, the enforcement section. And the other one's the Parental Bill of Rights. And what I found in the Parental Bill of Rights was a whole bunch of stuff that shouldn't be there in a Bill of Rights. In other words, you have the right to, you know, fill in the blank. And then it said, except as provided by law, or unless authorized by law, or, you know, unless otherwise prohibited by law. I'm thinking, wait a minute, the whole point of rights is that they are supreme to laws. Because if rights aren't supreme, then there's no point in them being rights. If the government says this is what your right is according to law, well, then it's a privilege. You know, it's something to be tampered with at the whims of the legislature. In other words, they're granting you a right, you know, for however long unless they change it. Well, that's not a right. You know, a right is something that is eternal. A right is something that is yours to practice without government interference. A right is not something that you get in terms of, you know, stuff. Okay. So you can't have a right that allows you to get something from somebody else. You don't have a right to anybody else's stuff. That's why healthcare is not a right. Food's not a right. Shelter, all that kind of stuff. They're necessities, but people confuse necessities with rights. Okay. You know, the right to keep and bear arms is a right because any oppressive government, the first thing they're going to do is take away your right to keep and bear arms. We all know how that works, right? But there's nothing in the Second Amendment in the Constitution that says you have the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed unless otherwise prescribed by law. Because that would be absurd. That would be insane. That's irrational. That's not how rights work. Yet that's exactly what was in the Florida bill. So I took all that stuff out, including a rather disgusting what looked like an abortion provision where they talked about, you know, the parental bill of rights shall not touch, you know, the right of parents to take a life. I'm like, what? You know, I read that. They actually wrote it twice. Or no, end life. That's how they put it. Shall not affect the ability of parents to end a life. And it was ironic that that particular provision was directly below the one that said that parents couldn't neglect or abuse their children. So you can't neglect or abuse your children, but nothing in the law says you can't take their life. I'm like, what? So I took those out too. Now, when I'm feeling a little disgruntled and maybe a little petty this morning, this is where I need Gene to sort of, you know, give me some rational basis, is that there's this big rally tomorrow, and there's all these groups, you know, and some really good groups supporting this. You know, you got Citizens for Medical Freedom, who are friends of ours. They report on the show all the time. We got the Florida Family Policy Council, Hispanic Faith Council, Children's Health Defense. That's Robert Francis Kennedy's group. Moms for America Action, Florida Citizens Alliance, Moms for Medical Freedom, only three more, Florida Parents Educators Association, Women Impacting the Nation, and the Florida Republican Assembly, all supporting this rally tomorrow for medical freedom, which is great. But not one of them has taken a position on our bills. And I think our bills are better than their bills. And that's where I think I might be petty. So how do I get our message out better? Gene? I need you. She's probably busy working on something for the show here, but I'm wondering why and how and how do I get the message out better? I was at the rally Tuesday, you know, I'm trying to present this stuff, you know, and like I say, I'm not a big rally person. Maybe I need to become a big rally person, just start attending all these things, you know, and I'd love to speak at it, but, you know, and this is why I say I don't want to sound too arrogant that yes, I'd go if I was speaking, obviously, but, you know, just standing in a crowd waving a sign, it doesn't seem to me the best use of my time because I'm more a citizen legislator. I write, I do things that few people, if hardly any people can do, and there's lots of folks that can you know, do the rallies and be the army and be the support, and I'm just, you know, Gene, help me out. I've got a waiver here. I want to get our message out better.
Good morning.
I don't know.
I think, one thing, I think you do need someone there, and that's where Action Radio, we need to come up with people from the communities that would be there, could be there, would be your that would be your voice, would be your presence, put it that way.
Yeah.
Because when people do show up, you may think, oh, it's not doing any good. They look. People look. If you say, oh, these people are really for this, and no one shows up,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't show the politicians that people are really for it. So I think people do need to go there in numbers. People do need to speak up. But I think as far as Action Radio goes and things like that, it's still pretty much unknown. And so
yeah. –
That's the thing. You can't expect someone to go and take a bill when they know hardly nothing about it. And even if they do know a little bit about it, if they're still on the fence as to, oh, is it good? Is it not? Is it whatever? They're not going to be as apt to take the bill or follow it up. So I would say, yes, we need people to be there, people to our tribe that is going to help push the citizen legislation, let people know that what's there and stuff like that. So I would say it would be a vitally important thing to go to because you can make the people that are unaware more aware of what you're doing or what we're doing.
You know, I should do see if I can get us to be on that sponsor list. You know, the Action Radio Citizen Legislature. So I'm making a little note to myself here, sponsor. Yeah, I'm not sure what sponsoring means. Do you put your name to it, or is this actual money contribution or whatever?
Money.
Okay. So yeah, that's the place we're not at yet. We have sponsors ourselves. Like we're actually looking for sponsors, not looking to be sponsors yet. At some point, I'm sure we can do that. Yeah, and I'm not criticizing the rallies. I mean, rallies are great. Rallies are wonderful. They do get the support. They do show support. They do get people together, and people see that other people are feeling as they do. So that's critical. I'm just questioning whether my time is best spent just attending a rally as opposed to actually participating as a speaker or as a bill sponsor or as something more than that. That's what I'm questioning. And I'm trying not to sound arrogant with this, but you know what I'm saying, right? Yeah.
Yes, I do. And the thing is, you have to start somewhere. And so by just showing up and being a part of them, with them, that can make your presence more, you know, known even more so than if you get up and speak. So or something like that. So I would say, yes, someone from Action Radio needs to be there, needs to, it's, and you know, the thing is, and maybe we want to start thinking about, I want to say like giveaways, like cozies or pens or something like that. And just
we have an Action Radio products.
And,
yeah, we have Action Radio
products,
but
they're not giveaways.
And
hand them out to people.
Oh,
because
see.
That way you could get your name out too. And they may be, oh, what's that? Well, they may tune in. And so, yeah, that all costs money, but you have to, sometimes we have to be with the people. Mm-hmm. For them to understand what we're all about.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and this is where I need help because that's not my strength.
And you unfortunately, know, I'm not in Florida, otherwise I would go.
Yeah. Yeah, and that'd be great. So hopefully you can get to, you know, at some point, you know, and, you know, get down here to do stuff like this. And I know people who are at the rally. So it's not like we're not unknown to the folks that are there. We're just not specifically. No one's going as an Action Radio person with a big Action Radio T-shirt saying, yay, citizen legislature. But we do have T-shirts. We're working on that. We do have a merchandising person. We do have Action Radio products. Probably I should mention it more. We have Action Radio products, which is a Facebook page, which has some pretty cool shirts that are very vaccine related. So this would have been a good time to get them out there. It's kind of overwhelming trying to do everything, and so I'm trying to delegate as much as possible. But it's the chicken and the egg, which comes first. You know, more people, the bigger the organization, the more people are interested in delegating. But in order to get the bigger organization, you know, we have to do more stuff, and it's a challenge because we're in unknown territory here. Okay, well, let me see what I can do after the show in terms of reaching out to some of these groups. We do press releases now. And we have some pretty cool ones. You should have gotten yours already, too, as far as our latest one. And so I'm trying to include all the Action Radio folks. And again, this is new for us as well. I've never written press releases. So, you know, we learn as we do, or we learn as we go. But the latest one has both bills, the parental rights bill and the public health amendments. And so we'll see. I mean, I'm going to get them directly to a couple legislators and see if that makes a difference as well. So we shall work on that. Okay. All right. So, I think you're right. I just need to do more and participate more. And this year I'm going to be able to do that too. So last year things were more of a struggle with Action Radio because we're still in our founding stages, as they say. And it is a big education process because no one, you know, it's hard for people to know what we do unless they actually spend some time looking and listening and you know, trying it out. And that's why I want to have Chancy on next week, or Chance. I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, but we'll find out because she's someone she's like the perfect person for us. She's new. She's enthusiastic. She wants to help, but isn't quite clear on the concept yet. And she'll be able to tell her friends, and they'll tell their friends. And we get more and more of those folks on. I think that's going to be a huge benefit to us. Okay. All right. Let me see what I can do because I want to cover this tomorrow. So this is going to be a big part of the show tomorrow is the rally. And hopefully I can get some folks either calling in from the rally, doing some of the things like we did January 6th. rather ominous date in U.S. history. But we had Josie and Jonathan Mosley calling in. They were right there, January 6th. So we're getting live updates as it happened. So maybe I can talk to some folks and see if we can get a couple live updates tomorrow. All right, do you have some any particular news stories you want to go on? Because we have, I have like tons of things to do this morning.
Well,
before we get to Dr. Fry. Yeah.
The thing that's all over the news now that Dr. Fauci wants people to be, it since the vaccine hasn't worked, now he wants people to get the booster.
Wait. He actually said the vaccine hasn't worked?
Well, basically on all the talk shows yesterday, I don't know if it was yesterday or when it was, but he was basically saying that, you know, it's not slow on the curb. I don't know what his exact words were. Let me see if I can find it. But basically now I listened to him talk and I can't listen to him. So I was just reading it and I don't remember exactly what it said. But basically
he looks
now
like a Star Trek alien. I mean,
people
he looks
need
like an
to
alien
get
life form. Yeah.
People need to get the booster now. And the ironic thing is, I heard yesterday that still 1,000 people a day, and I don't know if this is accurate or not. I don't know where I heard it on, but online I heard that 1,000 people a day were still dying of COVID. And it's like, my question is, if we've got one of the best healthcare systems in the world, if not the best, why are we the lowest? No. Why are we the highest in people dying with COVID? You got to wonder
because
that.
Because we're in the wrong treatment.
It's
by design.
No, exactly. I agree.
We're getting the wrong treatments. Yeah.
And I got into some trouble, but some people on Facebook just nailed me yesterday because Fauci, I don't know where he was talking. And all of these people were, I think it was like, I don't know, ABC, I don't know. But anyway, I wrote a comment about he should be fired.
Mm-hmm.
And someone, oh my God. Well, you know, just like Trump. And because I didn't listen to the whole thing, but I guess he must bash Trump and his handling of it. And I'm like, well, you know, armchair quarterback, you could always look back and do things differently. But
right. The
bottom line is, it's just like what you've been saying all the time. I think they were listening to Fauci is basically what it was. And when he said, you know, people should be able to go back to church. I mean, you can go to Walmart. If you can go to Walmart, why can't you go to church? That makes no sense. And you could say, well, there's a lot more people in church than there is at Walmart. Yes, that's true. But the thing is, if you believe in a higher power and you're out there with other people, you know, part of staying healthy is mental health.
Yep.
And being isolated in your house, not being exposed to other germs is not good for mental health or for health itself. And another thing, if you can go to Walmart, you can go to Target, then why couldn't you go to a clothing store? What's the difference? You know, I don't understand how they could pick and choose who
campaign contributions
was able to stay open and who was who had a close. But people were just nasty. And I just said, he should be in jail. And I said, way back from when he was dealing with the AIDS patients, he should be, you know, he should still be accountable for way back then. No one said anything after that. You know, they listen to this mainstream media stuff and they think it's the gospel truth. No, it's not. No, it's not.
Well, it's very interesting you should say that because at least your friends are able to listen to you after they've you know, sort of recited the talking points. There must be something about that.
These weren't friends. These were people I didn't even know because it was
just
on a newsreel for me. I think it was George Stephanopoulos. I don't know who he was interviewing because I can't listen to some of these people.
Oh, it was one of those public ones. Okay.
Yes, because they're so slanted. They don't want to know the truth. They just hide behind things. So, yeah, I couldn't even listen to it. I mean, I should have. But then I had a comment with what I had heard up to that point, and I'm just like, he just sits there so pompous and so smug. And I'm just like, you're the most nasty, evil person we have in this country right now.
Oh, God, he's right up there with Joseph Mengele of the Nazi regime. I mean, you figure he's willingly killed hundreds of thousands of people by withholding medical information, by banning things that we know work, by banning already FDA-approved products, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and various other things, by trying to limit or stop states from giving out monoclonal antibodies. He's doing everything possible to kill people so he can sell vaccines. You know, whereas the Nazis had an ideological obsession, this guy's got a financial obsession. You know, he'll do anything for a buck. I mean, he's like the worst of the, you know, capitalist. And I wouldn't even call him a capitalist, but he's the most greedy, avaricious, selfish, nasty, you know, I'd call him a psychopathic genocidal drug pusher for a reason, because that's what he's doing. He kills without a conscience. I'm sure he sleeps well at night. Doesn't bother him the slightest that you know, people are dying in ventilators, you know, on their own fluid because of his remdesivir. Doesn't bother him one bit, because if it did, he wouldn't do it. You know,
right,
so this
exactly.
is a problem. It's hard to fight absolute evil with logic, because evil doesn't recognize logic. But the propaganda aspects, yeah, but the propaganda, start again, Greg, the propaganda aspects in terms of people, why is it that the message is so effective when they keep repeating these very simple but very easily overturnable lies? I mean, it's obvious these people are lying. You know, I've got four articles here. You know, it's kind of curious. I thought I'd do a group effort and see what happened. Four articles I put together on Facebook that the pandemic is over. And Facebook actually found one of them and said, whoop, that's false information. The pandemic's not over. Yes, it is. It's been over three times. They keep bringing it back. But it says, you know, here we go, false information. Fact check, the COVID-19 pandemic is not over. You know, here's why. So they flagged my Washington Times story. The headline is Biden team won't admit it, but the COVID-19 pandemic is over. But they left my Washington Examiner story, the pandemic is over. They left my BizPak review with Bill Maher, who declares the pandemic is over. And they didn't touch my my Desiree.com one. Dr. Scott Gottlieb reveals the end of the pandemic is near. So I got four stories, you know, all basically on the same thing. The pandemic is either over or almost over. They only flagged one of them, which means they're only looking for certain things. But, you know, there are multiple sources out there saying this thing's done. So, you know, why isn't that news? I mean, it is in some places, but you got to look for it. Washington Times is a big newspaper. Washington Examiner is a big newspaper. And now, of course, online news source. You know, in fact, the Washington Examiner one is great. It's got a picture of a mask being burnt. It's wonderful.
The thing is, then the less narrative would be gone. You know, then it's like, why aren't people going back to work? Why are the store shelves empty? Well, why are
those
still
are
container ships by the thousands out in California, but none in Florida? I mean, right there tells you the whole story. And this is off the beaten path a little bit, but I talked to a friend of mine over the weekend, and you're going to love this. She lives in New York, Long Island, and her grandchildren are going to school, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, they got to wear masks in school.
Why?
But you know what, Greg? They could not wear a mask on Halloween, a Halloween mask, because it disrupts their learning.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to wade through the irony, and I'm running into molasses neck deep.
I mean, oh, my God, my friend flipped out. She said she's going to be kicked out of the school soon because she goes there to you know, do things with her grandchildren all the time. But I'm just like, I mean, who can – I mean, common sense people, how can a mask that they're supposed to wear every day not interfere with their learning, but a mask that we've worn years on Halloween or the day they celebrate Halloween in the schools, and how can that disrupt their learning?
Well, Halloween's for fun. I'm convinced that a lot of this is, you know, Democrats love misery. The Democrats are only, you know, Greg's theory number one, Democrats are only happy when everybody else is miserable. And the more miserable we are, the happier they are. The more control they have, the more, you know, as far as Democrats are concerned, we the people serve only two functions, death and taxes, or actually work and taxes. I wouldn't say death because they figure they pick our time to die when we can't do the other two, which is work and taxes. So as far as Democrats are concerned, people are to work and to pay taxes. That's our function. Okay. There is no higher purpose. You know, they don't care about families. They don't care about vacations. They don't care about quality of life. They don't care about better jobs. They don't care about anything except work and taxes and them being the elites. There's a lot of Republicans in that group too, by the way. And so the elites, that's what they want. So they don't care if the people are miserable because our function to them is work and taxes. That's how they get their power. And so it doesn't matter any of these other things. So they can twist in their mind, masks are for control. Well, Halloween masks are individual. See, they're not all the same. Halloween is fun. You know, Halloween's kind of, it's actually kind of funny. It's a pagan holiday. So you'd think that, you know, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Secular Democrats would be in favor of a pagan holiday, one would think. You know, I wonder if I can celebrate Ramadan. You know, can I wear a something? You know, put some Muslim garb on for Ramadan. I might do that actually here. We'll see. Anyway, but yeah, it's control. You know, masks, the Chinese masks with, you know, the ones with the worms inside, with the toxic chemicals, the one that everybody's wearing, the blue ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those ones. That's somehow that's required, right? You know, at least with a cloth mask, you can wash it. It's not going to do you any real – it's not going to do as much damage as these other ones. I mean, yeah, it's going to block some of your oxygen, cause you to, you know, rebreathe some of your own infections. That's why you breathe out. you know, it sort of disrupts the purpose of breathing out. If you have to breathe into a mask that, you know, is trapping everything that you're breathing out and keeping it there so you can breathe it in again. You know, that's kind of crazy. But anyway, but it's a control thing. Everything about this is control. You know, you mentioned earlier certain businesses. Why is the mom and pop, you know, hardware store closed but Walmart's open? Well, because Walmart contributes more to campaigns. This is about keeping big business going. And it's interesting. We could actually do a whole show on all the side effects that have gone to COVID, that they've attributed to COVID, but were really, you know, nasty stuff they wanted to do anyway, like mail-in voting. Mail-in voting is the worst possible way to vote. It's the most corrupt because it has the most hands touching the most ballots, you know, that aren't the actual voter and ballot box. You know, so it's the most steps in between the voter and the ballot box you can put in as mail-in voting. And so, but they said, well, COVID, we have to do mail-in voting. You know, say we have to lock down businesses because COVID, right? Well, no. You lock down businesses because you wanted to promote big business. You wanted to promote Amazon because they're big campaign contributors, and you want to get rid of the middle class. And that's what that's about. And so take a look at any number of things that they're doing now. You know, energy. Well, we don't have energy. Why? Well, COVID. You know, the supply chain. How come we're not getting, you know, goods on the shelves? Well, it's COVID. No, it's not. It's the fact that California passed a bill to get rid of all the independent truckers because they wanted them on working for companies on salary. Well, most truckers are independent. Therefore, to get rid of all the independent truckers is going to disrupt the supply lane. This isn't brain science. You know, this is pretty logical stuff. Anyway, so I got my four articles here. I don't particularly need to go into them because they all say the same thing. The pandemic is over, you know, and for the same reasons. The death rates are down. You know, the infection rates are down. Everything is down, but they keep resurrecting it. In fact, Gene, I don't know. I was talking to someone actually over the weekend too, similar kind of thing. How many times has the COVID pandemic been resurrected from dying out? Well, the first time was July of 2020. So it started in January of 2020, rose to a peak in April 15th, and I still got the CDC charts proving that this was pretty much over by July. So what happened in July? Lockdowns, masks, stress. You know, they kept people in homes, which is the greatest transmission point. They closed down businesses. They cost people their life savings. They caused depression, suicide, anxiety, drug addiction, and everything else. Well, it's the perfect breeding ground for a virus. So the virus came back. Big effing surprise, right? And so then it was dying out again, August, September, October of 2020. November is pretty much gone again. So what did they do? They brought in vaccines. Well, what did the vaccines do? Well, they vaccinated you for something that was already dead, the Alpha strain, causing the Delta strain. Guess what we have now? The Delta strain. So they resurrected it again. You know, that's two times they've resurrected this. One in July of 2020, and then in December of 2020, they resurrected it. Well, now it's been dying out. You know, more and more. It's everybody's forecasting. Anybody who knows anything, forecast is gone. And then what do? You know, they bring it back. How? Boosters. You know, mandates, vaccine mandates. So this is the third time they brought a virus back from death to put it on us so they can sell their vaccines. Isn't that incredible?
Very sad. Yeah. You know, to think that what we're 2021 and that's what's going on.
Yeah. 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 Let me play my Biden PSA. I'm going to play a couple of Biden things because it amuses me. When we come back, I want to talk about the most disturbing thing for me, and that's Big Bird and the kids. And that's using Sesame Street to propagandize kids. So we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes.
Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
All right, let's get back into the news here. This is our newsy theme. I haven't played this for a while, but I thought I'd try it out. Get us back into the news thing. So are you as disgusted as I am that the government, National Public Radio, whatever it's called, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, that's a misnomer if there ever was one. They're putting Big Bird on TV to propagandize kids into getting the vaccine. These people ought to be not just fired, but publicly humiliated. You know, put them up on a stand somewhere and say, these are the people that are propagandizing your kids. And you know that myocarditis you might get, you know, whatever the chance of getting is, these people are helping, you know, push that along. I am really disgusted by what Sesame Street is doing. I would pull all funding for the National Public Radio, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Sesame Street. I would have them completely gone because they're a government propaganda arm, and they should not be doing what they're doing. Jane?
Yeah, well, they've gone woke now for the past year or two. I agree. I totally agree. Something like the vaccine, that should be a parental decision for whatever reason or why ever the parent did or has their child get vaccinated, number one. Number two, some people cannot get vaccinated. Really, they can't because of medical issues or whatever. Mm. And what, a kid that sees these Big Birds saying about talking about it and stuff, and they go to their parents and say, when am I going to get vaccinated? And the parent says, oh, you can't. I mean, right away. What does that do to the child? I mean, it devastates them because, oh, Big Bird, everybody else is getting vaccinated. I need to be vaccinated. No, that is awful. That is awful for getting monies, especially PBS and stuff like that, or even NPR. I don't think any broadcasting entity should get money at all because they are not non-biased. And I know you can't be a totally 100% non-biased, but it's like, oh my gosh, there's so many other things that they could be working and teaching these kids versus go get the jab. You know, Big Bird got the vaccine. No,
exactly.
I just think it's awful. Awful that they're using children as pawns. That's disgusting.
Well, it's scaring kids too, and especially when they tell when the parents say, "No, you don't need this. It's not a good thing for you to get." And they think, "Well, Big Bird got it, and Big Bird, you know, you told me to watch Big Bird and trust Big Bird, and Big Bird's my friend. How come you're not? You know, how come you're not my friend, parents? You know, it's putting parents."
Right, and if they don't get it, they're going to die. You know, yes, horrible, horrible. What they're continuing to do with children. Yes,
We've talked about this before in terms of the whole climate change philosophy, where they're indoctrinating kids that we're all going to die in 12 years. You know, we did stories on this before COVID started. It's probably before you came to the show, but we were talking. I remember particularly over a series of weeks when climate was the big thing again. I think it was after Hurricane Sally. So that would have been a year. Maybe it was before that. Anyway, but the idea that especially Greta Thunberg, whatever her name is, this 16-year-old spoiled, snotty-nosed kid brat that goes before the UN and tells all the grown-ups how to behave. You know, but the idea that kids, they're thinking, well, I can't get married. I can't have kids. I can't start a business. I'm all going to be dead in 10 years. You know, what's the point? And there was mass depression across this country and probably across the world, you know, for kids that were thinking there's no future, there's no point in living because, you know, we're all going to be dead in 10 years anyway. And it was all a lie. It's always been a lie. It's been a lie since Leonard Nimoy, you know, Mr. Spock, you know, did this. In fact, I've still got the video. I can drag it out. Anybody can get it. It's still on YouTube. You know, he's talking about, global cooling. And they have this scene of this whiteout in Alaska, this massive blizzard that's just blowing snow everywhere. And Leonard Nimoy, in his very authoritative Mr. Spock voice, this is the future if we don't do something about climate change. Well, they're talking about global cooling, not global warming. Well, that didn't work. So they switched the message. They switched the temperatures. I guess people are more afraid of heat than cold. Personally, I'm more afraid of cold. heat, I can, you know, take a, you know, cold shower and, you know, at least hope so. But anyway, point being that they changed the message because the first one wasn't working. So they always do this. And but the poor kids, because they don't know the difference. I was bombarded with this crap by my socialist parents. Population bomb. We're all going to die. The world's overpopulated. You know, don't have kids. Don't get married. Don't try anything. It's not going to work. You know, it's like, what? So I understand this propaganda because they tried it on me. And eventually I grew up and started reading and went, wait a minute, I've been lied to. You know, and that's what's going to happen to these kids too, especially, you know, 20 years from now, they're going, wait a minute, I didn't get married. I didn't start a business. I didn't do this because they told me the world was going to end and it didn't end. Well, people are always saying the world's going to end. So far, they've been wrong. You know,
right.
The track record sucks. You know, going back, you know, you can probably go back to ancient times. There's probably some Dr. Fauci fascist, you know, 3,000 years ago running around China going, the world's going to end. Pretty much guarantee it. You're wrong then too. Yeah, the world might end someday, but if it does, A, you've got no control over it. So B, you might as well enjoy yourself while you're here. Because if these people are wrong, which they invariably are, you're missing the chance to live your life. That's the real thing. They're stealing wives from people.
Right.
Okay,
so
I got
sad.
Some.
So very sad. Yeah.
I got a couple. Well, let's get some fun news then. We don't want to, you know.
Yeah,
so many good things
just,
happening.
Unfortunately, wait. I want to do one more thing before.
Free.
This
I
has to do with the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, and I just want to talk a little bit, just say, make a couple comments that George Floyd's nephew, you hear what he's saying now?
No, go ahead. What's he saying?
Cortisa Rice is now basically threatening the jurors and that they need to, if they don't bring a verdict that he, if they bring a verdict that he doesn't like, then basically something should be done with those jurors. And they already know the jurors' pictures. Or they've already gotten photos of the jurors, so they know who they are.
Oh, that's disgusting. How'd they get that?
It is. And the thing is, George Floyd was a thug. And obviously, this Cortez Rice doesn't have a clue what went on. Otherwise, he wouldn't even be making these statements. But it's interesting how the left, when they don't get a decision, a verdict that they like, then they start rioting, they start to destroying things. I was I saw pictures this weekend of, you know, the National Guard and different things that are being brought to that area. Well, the bottom line is, maybe if the police wouldn't have stood down and they would have had the people there protecting their town, this kid wouldn't have been there trying to protect a town. I mean, he's a kid. And they're like, well, now he's a kid. Before he was an adult. Well, he's 18. He was 17 when it happened. And bottom line is this. I know why he did it, and he has a lot of qualifications. I mean, the kid is like, for being 17, I mean, he was doing a lot for his community. But the bottom line is this. It's like, where were the cops that night and nights before that? But no, they weren't told to go and take care of situations. If people would know that if actions have consequences, they wouldn't have been doing what they were doing.
You know, liberal mayors
wanted
those demonstrations.
Yeah, if the jury doesn't give the verdict what Cortez thinks is appropriate, okay, well, now then you have to get rid of the jurors. And, you know, even the judge is getting threats. And, you know, I figured that always happens. But, you know, the jurors, it's not as though they were like at the street corner saying, pick me. You know, they were chosen. And you can only charge someone or not based on the evidence.
No, and it's interesting. These are the same people that are saying ignore the Fifth Circuit Court of the mandate, the vax mandate. The Brandon's insurrection, Brandon's coup, is going out and saying, don't listen to the court. You know, do what we tell you. You know, so they want it both ways. They want their cake and eat it too. You know, you can't have it both ways. You can't have your cake and you can't eat it too. It doesn't work that way. And so this is a fascinating display of leftist hypocrisy, which is, you know, almost those words go together, you know, like anything else. But it's just fascinating to watch this. And if they riot, they riot. The riot has nothing to do with the verdict. Now, fortunately, the jury is sequestered. They're not going to hear all these stories. They're not going to hear all these threats. So they're going to be able to render a decent verdict. And this judge.
Oh, I didn't think they were sequestered.
Oh, sorry. Well, no, they can't. No, I don't think any jury can listen to media reports during a trial.
Oh, but, you know, if they go home, I mean, how can you not hear something?
I don't think they can go home.
You know what I mean?
Aren't they staying in the court?
No, I was told they weren't.
They're going home?
I could be wrong.
Oh, that's stupid. Let's find out. See if you can, you know, is Kyle Rittenhouse Jerry sequestered? Let's do a quick search. While you're doing that, I want to go over some poll numbers because this is pretty funny, actually. This is in several sources this morning. Neon Nettles, the source that I found. Plurality of Americans want Biden to resign, retire, or quit by next year. Poll shows. This crushing new poll reveals U.S. voters want Joe Biden out of office in 2022. Well, technically, he's not in office, folks. We know it's a coup. They stole the election. So what you're really saying is you want him to confess, you know, or be prosecuted for stealing the election. That's the real question. Of course, nobody's asking that. That's why I asked. I did that on Facebook the other day. I said, you know, given that Brandon stole the election in a coup, you know, do you approve or disapprove of his actions so far? You know, I mean, I do that just for the sake of framing things in different arguments so people have a different way of thinking about it. So the article says, and this is by Jay Greenberg, Neonetta, 11th November. So this is Veterans Day. A plurality of American voters want Democrat Joe Biden out of office by next year as his approval rating continues to plummet to record lows. This will be fascinating. He'll probably have the lowest poll ratings in history. But that's okay. Like I say, he's not actually there in office legally, so that changes everything. But for convenience, I'll go along with the charade. This is according to the new USA Today Suffolk poll, a staggering number of U.S. voters say that seeing Biden leave office in some way or another is a priority for 2022. Now, what's interesting is, of course, that means that the next person in the coup, Kamala Harris, would assume the position, you know, sitting in the White House chair, obviously by coup. And what's fascinating, and I had this revelation this weekend, that Biden is doing a really horrible job, you know, after losing his faculties. Well, the thing is that Kamala Harris would do an even worse job while retaining her faculties. So at her best, you know, she is still worse than Joe Biden at his worst, which is something scary to think about. Anyway, back to the poll. Respondents were asked what they wanted to see Joe Biden do in 2022. This is while many said they wanted to see their concerns about the economy and immigration addressed, the most popular response was for Biden to leave office altogether. This is hysterical. All right, so let me give you the responses. The top 10 responses to the question from surveyed voters about what they wanted Biden to do in 2022 were, number one, resign, retire, or quit, and that was 20%. Two, economy and jobs, 11%. Three, unite and help the country, 8%. Well, he's incapable of doing that. Four, immigration and border control, oh, please, 8%. COVID mandates, 6%. I don't know if they were for them or against them. It doesn't say in the poll. Infrastructure bills, 5%. Inflation, 4%. Healthcare, 3%. Climate change, environment, 3%. And bipartisanship, 3%. That's fascinating. So the poll released on Sunday found that the overwhelming majority of registered voters do not want Biden to run for a second term. I didn't even think that was a possibility. I mean, they talk about it, but is anybody even seriously considering this guy is going to be around? I don't even think he's going to make the end of this term, you know, let alone run for another one. He's not going to, if he runs against Trump again, unless they think they can steal the election twice, there's no way he's going to do anything. And he's going to be in worse shape, you know, 4 years from now than he is now. Ugh. Jean, did you find anything on the jury? I'm just curious.
No, I'm still looking.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let me just give you a couple more quotes here, then I'll move on to another topic. Other top lines from the poll included. Nearly half of those surveyed, 46%, say Biden has never done a worse job as president, has done a worse job as president than they expected. Well, geez, what the hell do they expect? Including 16% of those who voted for him. Wow. Independents by 7-1, that's 44-6%, sees them worse, not better than they expected. Well, he's doing exactly as I expected. I mean, I know that sounds, again, arrogant, but what do you expect when someone steals the election for you, when you've been an incompetent your entire life, when everything you've talked about has been, you know, screwing our energy, screwing our supply lines, getting rid of our jobs, causing massive inflation, spending money we don't have, raising the national debt? That's exactly what he's talking about. What the hell do people expect was to happen? What's happening is exactly what they planned to happen. No borders. He said that. And these people who are running around saying, well, he ran as a moderate. Give me a break. He never ran as a moderate. He hasn't been a moderate since, you know, since the 80s. Even then, I don't know if he was a moderate. Back to the survey. Nearly two-thirds of Americans, that would be 64% for those mathematically challenged, that's my words, say they don't want Biden to run for a second term. That includes 28% of Democrats. Oh, here we go. Vice President in name only, Kamala Harris, approval rating is 28%, even worse than Biden's. The poll shows that 51% disapprove of her of the job she's doing. 28%, that's not even a third. You know, she's heading down to a one-quarter favorable rating. I mean, 75% of people don't like what she's doing. This is hysterical. Anyway, you get the idea. Basically, they suck. And this is what happens when you let government pick the people to run government. When government picks people to run government, the people they pick suck. I mean, totally and completely. Anyway, anything on that, Gene? Any more for information, or is it still a challenge?
No, I'm still looking. Yeah.
Okay.
The thing is, you know, to tell you the truth, I really didn't think the Biden, I don't want to say administration, I don't know what to call it, but I really didn't think it would have
Biden
been as bad as it is. But if you look at everybody in each cabinet person, everybody that he has working for him, they're all inept. And if you look at every one of them has a, I don't want to say crisis, but they have a major issue on their hand that they're not dealing with.
No, but these people are all there by design. This is Obama without the accountability.
Right, and you talk about Kamala. I don't think anybody could get worse numbers than her. And the thing is, if Biden's like they're saying that Biden has to go, who are they going to put in there? The Democrats know they can't put Kamala in there because, oh, my God, she
She couldn't run when she was popular. Even at her most popular, she couldn't get a single delegate. You know, she dropped out of the
Iowa
caucuses.
And we all know
caucuses.
What she's going to be doing. She ain't going to be running the country.
Oh, no, she'll be off partying with, you know, she'll probably try and go back to France and have some truffles and escargot. You know, I'm sure she was treated very well by the French because the French are nice people. You know, contrary to beliefs of some Americans, which I'm not sure because France is a wonderful country. You know, folks, keep in mind, too, no France, no United States. They're the ones that helped us fight the British. So, you know, French, we have a long established relationship. You know, that Statue of Liberty out there in New York Harbor, that came from the French. Okay. People forget that. And it's not about you're tired and you're hungry and your huddled masses yearning to be free. It's not a welfare immigration statue. It's a Statue of Liberty, not a statue of immigration. Okay. I wrote a new poem for the Statue of Liberty, which I should probably drag out here at some point. All right. I want to change things a little bit up and at the risk of boring y'all to death. This is why I need Eugene to tell me if I'm getting a little too carried away, because I love this stuff. But I've actually got the latest opinion of the Fifth Circuit. And
okay,
if you ever want – go ahead.
Hold on. I was just going to say the only thing I've found so far, and maybe someone else has something else, so please call in, but it says the judge ruled that it was unlikely he would sequester the jury during deliberations. But I was told that they weren't sequestered throughout trial, but I could be wrong.
See, that's stupid because now they're risking their lives going to and from the courtroom. And that's probably how they got the pictures. You know, they just photographed everybody going in.
Yeah, exactly.
They just deduced who the jurors were, but, you know, and that's really too bad. But like I say, the left, when they don't want the court decision, they tell you to ignore it. When they want a court decision that shouldn't be, they tell you to honor it. And it's like when Trump got elected in 2016 and they had the electors, you know, there were death threats against the electors. Well, you have to vote for Hillary because she really won. Well, no, she didn't. Oh, Hillary. She'd be the one person who'd be less popular than Kamala Harris right now. So
I don't know. Right?
Really?
I don't think so. Kamala Harris is pretty darn unpopular. You know,
you think Hillary would be more popular?
I don't. I'd almost say yes.
That's the scariest thing I've heard all day. Well, okay. Well, I don't know.
I'd have to think about that a little bit more, but I'd almost say yes, because Kamala, she really, oh my gosh, she, oh, I guess it's just even her presence when she goes somewhere and she speaks, it's like, she really don't have a clue.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. But I'm curious your point of view, you know, as she is, you know, trying to be the feminist leader, you know, most powerful woman in America. And she's like, she's neither a feminist nor a leader.
Exactly. She's a thug, just like Biden.
Interesting. You know, yeah, this is what I call the Biden coup. So if you're looking for words, it's the Biden coup, the Biden insurrection, the Brandon coup, any of those things. Coup is the short form. A lot of people don't know what a coup d'etat is. I mean, Claire explained it. I know that's French for, you know, overthrowing a government. But what she really said was coup is a strike. So it's a coup de grace, you know, the death blow, you know. So a coup d'etat is like the death blow to the state. And so in other words, it's the overturning of the state. And so it's French are big on political revolutions. They should know. Anyway, so I found what I think is the most fascinating to me. And again, and I need Gene to sort of help me out in case I get too caught up in the weeds here. I've got the Supreme Court, not the Supreme Court. I've got the Fifth Circuit Court opinion on the mandates and why they set aside the mandates. And it is the best opinion I think I've ever read of any court. It's funny. It's direct. It talks to people at any level. And those that think you can't read law and you can't read the opinions of judges because they speak in all this lofty language that's way beyond all you folks, read this opinion. I've got it on my Facebook page, but it's very hard to find because it's, they don't have like a big graphic with it because it's all text. But this was from, it's filed November 12, 2021, Lyle W. Case Clerk, United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. I'm not sure exactly sure where the Fifth Circuit is. I think it's New Orleans. I think it's south. So I think it's the next one over from Florida. And then this is before, and the judges were Jones, Duncan, and Engelhardt, circuit judges. And so these are, you know, of course, the media is immediately, you know, saying, well, these are Trump and Reagan appointees. Yeah, well, they also happen to be really good. Hell of a lot better than the Trump appointees, you know, what's her name? Coney Barrett. Amy Coney Barrett, Kavanaugh, and Gorsuch. You know, the three twiddlers. The only judges worth anything, justices worth anything on the Supreme Court are Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas. You know, I would just dump the others for incompetence and stupidity, and of course the liberals for violating their constitutional oaths. Anyway, it says here, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, quote, reasonably determined, unquote, in June 2020, that an emergency temporary standard, ETS, that's what the Brandon insurrection is going for, an emergency temporary standard, ETS, was not necessary to protect working people from occupational exposure to infectious disease, including COVID-19. So that already concluded in June 2020. The OSHA has no business doing this. Okay. It says, I'm going to skip over all the citations. It says, this was not the first time OSHA had done this. It has refused several times to issue ETSs, despite legal action urging it to do so. In fact, in its 50-year history, OSHA has issued just 10 ETSs. Six were challenged in court. Only one survived. The reason for the rarity of this form of emergency action is simple. Courts and the agency have agreed for generations that extraordinary power is delivered to OSHA under the emergency provisions of the Occupational Safety and Health Act. So that power should be delicately exercised and only in those emergency situations which require it. This case concerns OSHA's most recent ETS, the agency's November 5th, 2021 emergency temporary standard, and they put in parentheses, the mandate, requiring employees of covered employers to undergo COVID-19 vaccination or take weekly COVID-19 tests and wear a mask. An array of petitioners seeks a stay, in other words, a hold, barring OSHA from enforcing the mandate during the pendency of judicial review. In other words, during the time they're going over this. Judicial review, as we've talked about, is one of those powers that they shouldn't have, but actually they're using it right here. So I'm kind of conflicted about the fact they're using an unconstitutional power, but they're doing it very well. So we can talk about that too. Anyway, it says on November 6, 2021, we agreed to stay the mandate pending briefing and expedited judicial review. Having conducted that expedited review, we reaffirm our initial stay. So in other words, they stopped the mandate. Fifth Circuit stopped the mandate. And then, of course, it was challenged. And then they went back and reviewed it again and said, yep, we were right. We're stopping it again. You with me so far, Jean?
Yes, and it is in New Orleans. You were right, okay. Louisiana.
So there you go. So I tell you, the South is going to save this country. You folks, I've said it before. I haven't said it for a while, but the South is going to save this country. This is where the independents are. This is where, it's ironic that these were the states that had the gumption to defy the federal government back in the 1800s. I mean, for the completely wrong reason, slavery. But they had the gumption to defy the federal government. You're not going to see anywhere else in the country this happening. So the South is going to save the United States, this time for the right reasons. Okay, back to the court opinion. OSHA promulgated its much-anticipated vaccine mandate on November 5th, 2021. Framed as an ETS, the mandate requires all employers of 100 or more employees to develop, implement, and enforce a mandatory COVID-19 vaccination policy and require any workers who remain unvaccinated to undergo weekly COVID-19 testing and wear a face covering at work in lieu of vaccination. On the afternoon of the mandate's publication, a diverse group of petitioners, including covered employers, states, religious groups, and individual citizens, moved to stay and permanently enjoin the mandate, in other words, stop it forever, in federal courts of appeal across the nation. Now, what's interesting is this went in courts across the nation, but this is the only court that did the right thing. I find that interesting. I think there's 9 circuits, and only the Fifth Circuit did the right thing. That in itself means that the other 8 circuits screwed up. Just my opinion. And then it says here, finding cause to believe there are grave statutory and constitutional issues with the mandate, we intervened and imposed a temporary stay on OSHA's enforcement of the mandate. for ease of judicial review and in light of the pressing need to act immediately, in other words, before more people get vaccinated, right? We consolidated our court's petitions under the case number captioned above. Many of the petitioners are covered private employers within the geographical boundaries of the circuit. Their standing to sue is obvious. Okay, standing is a big thing. We've talked about that with Jonathan. In other words, you can't sue in court unless they think that you have a good reason to sue, unless you're going to be injured, unless something is going to affect you. You can't just bring a lawsuit just because you want to. It has to affect you personally. And so they said their standing, this was obvious. The mandate imposes a financial burden upon them by deputizing their participation in OSHA's regulatory scheme. In other words, it makes private companies government officials, right? Exposes them to severe financial risk if they refuse or fail to comply, and threatens to decimate their workforce and business prospects by forcing unwilling employees to take their shots, take their tests, or hit the road. Now, I'm sorry, Gene, have you ever heard a court opinion which is so blunt? It says forces unwilling employees to take their shots, take their tests, or hit the road. Isn't that great?
No,
language?
Yeah, that's very good.
This is fun. Let me go on.
But
like
it's
I say,
way out of OSHA's scope of practice too. They should not. They don't mandate vaccines.
No. Well, they did it because they thought they could. And then there's a later thing in this court case where they said they went around, they did a workaround. They tried to find which agency they could force this through. But OSHA, as we know, does workplace regulations. They're the ones that have the emergency materials data sheets. So in other words, when you're working with chemicals, they'll tell you what to do and what to do if it's spilled. Okay. So OSHA affects physical things within the workplace. They don't cover the workers themselves in terms of what the workers have to do. Okay. So in other words, physical, if you're going to paint, you got to wear a mask that's good enough to protect you from paint. It's kind of ironic. We're talking about masks. Those actually work, by the way, as compared to the blue things, you know, from China with the parasitic worms inside that, you know, I'm not going to go into it. But it's interesting that they can't require OSHA cannot require you to take something into your body. That's not their jurisdiction. Their jurisdiction ends at the physical properties of the workplace. You know, things that you can trip on, things that can fall on you, things that can hurt you, things that are unsafe, welding, you know, unguarded things or chemical things or any of those things. That's what OSHA covers, and rightly so. You know, it'd be nice to have it all at the state level, but, you know, we'll work on that later. But the idea that OSHA can mandate a vaccine, and the government says, well, we're just trying to keep workers safe. Well, I would challenge that. I mean, again, nowhere are they challenging the fact that these vaccines are A, don't work, and B, are dangerous, and C, the fact the pandemic's already over. That seems to be lacking in this case, but, you know, the day is young. It says the petitioners seek a stay and ultimately a permanent injunction of the mandate's enforcement pending full judicial review of the mandate. We address their request for a stay today. Part two. The traditional stay factors govern a request for a stay pending judicial review. Under the traditional stay standard, the court considers four factors. Now, this is the whole basis of the decision. One, whether the stay applicant has made a strong showing that he is likely to succeed on the merits. Two, whether the applicant will be irreparably injured absent a stay. Three, whether issuance of a stay will substantially injure the other parties interested in proceeding. And four, where the public interest lies. I can answer those real briefly, and then we can either move on or continue, but I find this case fascinating. Whether the stay applicant has made a strong showing that he is likely to succeed on the merits. Yeah, it's already proven this is unconstitutional, and OSHA has no jurisdiction. That's a no-brainer. Two, whether the applicant will be irreparably injured absent a stay. Well, sure, if you get a vaccine that kills you, that's irreparably injured. All right, so that's a no-brainer. Three, whether the issuance of a stay will substantially injure the other parties interested in proceeding. No, companies have done just fine without vaccine mandates, all through the pandemic, in fact. And four, where the public interest lies. And that, of course, is the catch-all. Do you want to hear more, Gene? What do you think? I find this fascinating. I don't know if everybody else.
Yeah, I just want to make a couple comments about that.
Oh, yeah,
because it's like with the mandates and stuff like that, or what they're rolling out, we don't even know the truth of how many people that have had the vaccine have had adverse side effects. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what's the very sad thing, that we're not being told the truth. So that's crazy in itself. But it will be interesting to see, because the next step from here is the Supreme Court, correct?
That's a good question. I think so. I think from appeals, usually you have the lower courts. The district courts will take the case initially if it's a federal case. If the district courts can't resolve it, it goes through the appeals process. This is the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. It can stop there, or if it can't be resolved there, then I think the Supreme Court has to resolve the appeal. I think that's how the process works. That would be a Jonathan question. But
and then
yeah, go ahead.
The hospitals in Florida that we're going to this weekend, Friday and Saturday, escort their non-jabbed workers out of the building. Did they do that, or because of this ruling, did they put it on hold?
Well, they had to have done it themselves because this ruling puts the mandate on hold. There is no vaccine mandate right now. It's got to stay. In other words, it's unenforceable. You know, the Fifth Circuit has ruled twice on this. One, they put a stay on it. Then they reviewed their decision, decided it was correct, and reinforced their stay. There is no Brandon mandate. It doesn't exist. OSHA has no power to do anything because it's pending judicial review. So in other words, they're reviewing it. You know, they've decided that there's enough on the merit to make it unconstitutional and illegal. Now they're going into the fine print. Now they're looking at the details. But the preponderance of evidence they found is that this is unconstitutional, unenforceable, illegal, and not within OSHA's mandate anyway, nor in Congress's. So the fact that Ascension Sacred Heart and some of these other hospitals, you know, and our local Santa Rosa hospital fired people for not taking something for a mandate that doesn't exist, that in itself is a crime. To me, that's what's that thing? Wrongful termination. Okay. So where are the lawyers suing for wrongful termination? If you get sued, if you get fired from a job for a mandate that doesn't exist, why can't you go to your boss and say, look, you know, I won't say it. You know what I'm thinking, right? Jerk.
Yeah.
I'll be nice
about that. But I'm thinking, too, if someone dies from it or gets mm-hmm. severely sick, compromised, mm-hmm. the workplace should be sued, too.
Well, they should, but it's too late then. See, the whole point of this is to prevent people from being injured in the first
place.
Right. This is where the court's being really good. And so, you know, as much as it's one thing to sue afterwards for financial compensation. Okay. It's another thing once you're permanently injured. So what these people are really trying to avoid is permanent injury and, of course, avoid death. And these are consequences of the examination, of the vaccination. I'm seeing things all the time. The Vaccine Safety Research Project, have you seen that poor woman on One American News? She shakes constantly. She can't stop shaking. I mean violently shaking, 24 hours a day. You know, it's the only time she gets relief is when she's still shaking, but she doesn't know it because she's asleep. And that's all the result of the jab. You know, so there are,
right.
are many, many serious consequences. Look at the people who probably died from this. We suspected that Brian Sicknick, the Capitol Police officer, died, you know, when he had two strokes on the same day. We think, you know, and of course, the strokes come from blood clots, and the jab gives you blood clots. So we put two and two together and speculated that's probably why he died. You look at all the folks, the different people. In fact, there are two people. It's interesting. Both a Florida legislator and some, I think it was an actor, both of whom, they were like in their mid-40s, both of whom said, if you don't get the jab, you're a sick person. You're horrible. You're killing grandma. They did all the usual invectives, right? And 3 weeks after their second jab, both of them dropped dead. You know, it's like their karma really caught up with them, you know, because they were evil in their heart and they had, you know, all this internal poison and venom, you know, then they got the jab and they died. The very things they accused people of, you know, were killing everybody else. They said, you better get this or you're killing everybody else, killed them. You know, what are you going to say? It's kind of weird.
Right. Yeah.
Anybody wants to join in this, 215-383-3832. This is kind of our Monday morning free-for-all. But let me go on here. And the reason I'm going through this court case is, yes, I love court cases. I love reading these opinions. But every argument you could possibly want, every argument you could possibly want against vaccines is in this court opinion. And that's why it's so good, especially when they say here. This line one more time here. It says, you know, and threatens, you know, it says workforces and business prospects by forcing unwilling employees to take their shots, take their tests, or hit the road. You're never going to find that in a court case. All right. So it says the petitioners seek a stay and ultimately a permanent injunction of the mandate's enforcement pending full judicial review of the mandate. We address their request for a stay. Okay. I already went over that. All right. We first consider whether the petitioner's challenges to the mandate are likely to succeed on the merits. For a multitude of reasons, they are. We begin by stating the obvious. The Occupational Safety and Health Act, which created OSHA, was enacted by Congress to assure Americans safe and healthful working conditions and to preserve our human resources. Yada, yada, yada. Court cases, it was not and likely could not be under the Commerce Clause and the non-delegation doctrine intended to authorize a workplace safety administration in the deep recesses of the federal bureaucracy to make sweeping pronouncements on matters of public health. affecting every member of society in the profoundest of ways. And that's why OSHA has no jurisdiction. Let me read it again just because it might not be clear. We begin by stating the obvious. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, was enacted by Congress to assure Americans safe and healthful working conditions and to preserve our human resources. Statement of findings, okay, it was not and likely could not be under the Commerce Clause. Okay, so that's what they're using. They're using the Commerce Clause, which says that Congress and the federal government can regulate anything to do with interstate commerce. Well, that's BS. You know, but they've used that for just a multiple different things. The Civil Rights Act, you know, was brought in under the Commerce Clause because Black Americans couldn't, you know, dine in restaurants and couldn't travel, and that affected interstate commerce. It's kind of a crazy way of doing it, but that's how they did it. All right, back to the court case. On the dubious assumption that the mandate does pass constitutional muster, which we need not decide today, it is nonetheless fatally flawed on its own terms. Those are pretty strong words. Fatally flawed. Okay. That when the judge says fatally flawed, that's bad. Okay. It says indeed the mandate's strained prescriptions combine to make it the rare government pronouncement that is both over-inclusive, applying to employees and employers in virtually all industries and workplaces in America, with little attempt to account for the obvious differences between the risks facing, say, a security guard on a lonely night shift and a meatpacker working shoulder to shoulder in a cramped warehouse, and under-inclusive, purporting to save employees with 99 or more coworkers from a, quote, grave danger in the workplace, while making no attempt to shield employees with 98 or fewer coworkers from the very same threat. The mandate stated impetus, a purported emergency that the entire globe has now endured for nearly 2 years and which OSHA itself spent nearly 2 months responding to, is unavailing as well, and its promulgation grossly exceeds OSHA's statutory authority. Keep it up. How are you doing so far? Does it make sense? Questions? Comments?
Yeah, no, it makes total sense.
Yeah. Isn't this great language, though? I mean, it's rare that you find something this accessible to understand, this direct, this logical, you know, because courts, a lot of times they do put a bunch of flowery language when they don't know what they're talking about. Obviously, the judge who wrote this knows exactly what he's talking about. I think they're all he's. That's why I said that. All right, let me continue that. And Jean, you know, feel free to interrupt me at any time. If there's a point that you particularly want to emphasize or question, you know, please just jump right in or hit the hotel bell. We haven't heard that for a while. All right. Continuing on, after the president voiced his displeasure with the country's vaccination rate in September, the administration pored over the U.S. code in search of authority or a, quote, workaround for imposing a national vaccine mandate. Let me say that again. After the president voiced his displeasure with the country's vaccination rate in September. This is what the policy is based on, his displeasure, right? The administration pored over the U.S. code in search of authority. In other words, they wanted to find a way to do what they wanted to do, you know, somehow. Okay, so in other words, it was a policy in search of a law rather than a law in search of the appropriate policy. So they're doing it ass backwards. All right. It says for imposing a national vaccine mandate. The vehicle it landed on was an OSHA ETS. That's the emergency temporary standard, right? The statute empowering OSHA allows OSHA to bypass. This is why they did this. This is really critical to understand, too. The statute empowering OSHA, allows OSHA to bypass typical notice and comment proceedings for 6 months by providing, quote, for an emergency temporary standard to take immediate effect upon publication in the Federal Register. In other words, regulations before they become law, and this is a bad process too, but at least it's better than what these folks want. It has to be published in the Federal Register. They have to take public commentary. That's the time for Congress to overturn it. Okay, that's 6 months of consideration before a regulation goes into effect. All right, and so that's a good thing. It still should go to Congress for final approval. I think all regulations should have to be approved by Congress, but that's just me. But anyway, what the OSHA, if it's an emergency, say like there's some chemical release or some dangerous chemical they find that's in workplaces, they need to stop it right now. Okay, they can bypass that 6 months because 6 months of people might be killed or injured by some horrible thing that's in the workplace. All right, so then they stop it. And that's what this procedure is for. It's not for vaccinations. And this is where it gets interesting. It says for an emergency temporary standard to take immediate effect upon publication in the Federal Register if it determines, A, that employees are exposed to grave danger from exposure to substances or agents determined to be toxic or physically harmful or from new hazards. Okay, that's not medical, folks. That's chemical, you know, and other stuff. And B, that such emergency standard is necessary to protect employees from such danger. As the name suggests, emergency temporary standards are an unusual response to exceptional circumstances. Okay, now this to me this makes perfect sense because, you know, we've been in this alleged pandemic now for almost 2 years. Okay, so it's not exceptional. It's not unusual. In fact, it's kind of like business as usual, the way it seems to be going. Back to the court case. Thus, courts have uniformly observed that OSHA's authority to establish emergency temporary standards under this extraordinary power that is to be delicately exercised in only certain situations, limited situations. But the mandate at issue here is anything but delicate exercise of this extraordinary power. One more quote citations. Quite the opposite. Rather than a delicately handled scalpel, the mandate is a one-size-fits-all sledgehammer that makes hardly any attempt to account for differences in workplaces and workers that have more than a little bearing on workers' varying degrees of susceptibility to the supposedly, quote, grave danger the mandate purports to address. So they don't even think this is a grave danger. That in itself is fascinating for a court to do, all right? Anyway, so it says, I'm probably getting a little bit too much into the weeds here. I might want to hold this up now. And see if I can skip to some of the other sections or just hold this up and talk about something else. Hey, let me do that right now. And that way I can sort of, like I said, I don't want to bore you and have you all glaze over. Oh, Greg's reading the entire court case. Because some of this is really good. Let's see if I can find another really juicy quote. Let me play your new Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. So I made this over the weekend and recorded it yesterday. And so it is, I think it was Saturday. Anyway, Santa Rosa Volunteers is our big sponsor here, and we're getting more, but these folks are the best. And so they've commissioned me to do reports on all of our founding documents, which is all the Federalist Papers, you know, the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, Articles of Confederation, and I'll probably extend to the Mayflower Compact and various other ones. I'm going to tell you this for now. I'm making them shorter. It's only 5 minutes, and then we'll be back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments. Insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. In Federalist Paper number 7, Alexander Hamilton once again beats the same dead horse he trotted out in his first Federalist Paper, that the Constitution has to be ratified or the states will end up divided in three or so groups or will cause other nations to invade us. Upping the ante now, he claims that we will all be at war with ourselves in this paper, and once again the cure is to ratify the Constitution. Ironic again that the Constitution was in full force when the states did divide, but in a unified way against the federal government created by the Constitution, and not in the three or four separate confederacies as argued by Hamilton and the Federalists, but one confederacy of states who were run by the Democrat Party. Be careful what you wish for. Hamilton begins with this question. It is sometimes asked, with an air of seeming triumph, what inducements could the states have, if disunited, to make war upon each other? This is a preposterous question, given that the states were united under the Articles of the Confederacy, and that no states were at war or were, to my knowledge, trying to take each other's territory. So Hamilton asks a question that requires an assumption that doesn't exist. Therefore, a legitimate answer cannot be given. But that's not the point of the question. The point is to plant in your brain that if the states became disunited, what would save the Union? And the only answer Hamilton wants you to consider is the new Constitution. Hamilton also says, we have a vast tract of unsettled territory within the boundaries of the United States. There are still discordant and undecided claims between several of them, and the dissolution of the Union would lay a foundation for similar claims between them all. Well, yes, the dissolution of the Union would cause territorial disputes, but to use that as a reason to ratify the Constitution, you have to believe two things. One, that there is going to be a dissolution of the Union under the Articles of Confederation, and two, that there will be no dissolution of the Union nor any territorial disputes if the Constitution is ratified. Both of those are impossible to argue as connected or even probable individually. Therefore, the argument for the Constitution from the Federalists is based solely on their fertile imagination of what they think will scare the people who would vote to ratify the Constitution the most.
If this is in fact the case, then the Constitution was argued from a huge pyramid of ever-increasing lies designed to channel all thinking to a predetermined outcome without real examination, because the building block evidence and arguments of the Federalists crumble at the slightest scrutiny. They knew that, but argued it that way anyway. Kind of sounds like the government position on COVID since early 2020. Hamilton concludes, "From the view they have exhibited of this part of the subject, this conclusion is to be drawn, that America, if not connected at all, or only by the feeble tie of a simple league, offensive and defensive, would, by the operation of such jarring alliances, be gradually entangled in all the pernicious labyrinths of European politics and wars, and by the destructive contentions of the parts into which she was divided, would be likely to become a prey to the artifices and machinations of powers, equally the enemies of all of them. Divide and conquer must be the motto of every nation that either hates or fears us." At the end of this Federalist paper, Alexander Hamilton has tied together every preposterous proposition he is making with the hope that enough bogus fears will be grouped together, and the simple weight of numbers of so many ridiculous assumptions will somehow, as a group, give them credibility. Divide and conquer. I wonder if he would have used race like it's used today, if he could. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Okay, we're back. Gene Verning, our producer, and me, you know, here, as Rush Limbaugh used to say, friendly, lovable, you know, cuddly fuzzball host. I miss Rush. Anyway, we got a couple of choices here. We've got about 42 minutes or so before Dr. Peter Pryde joins us, and we're going to talk, you know, nuclear weapons, national security, all that kind of stuff on a much bigger level. I just find this court case fascinating, but I should probably get back to the title of the show. Brannon has taught Americans how to be Americans again. Resist. And so something's happening in this country, and we've talked about it before. In fact, we did a show on this, you know, right after Trump's rally in Iowa, that we've crossed a line from compliance to resistance, and it's happening everywhere. And I think we were some of the first to call it. Now a lot more folks are saying the same thing. But you look around. We've got freedom rallies. We had a couple of rallies in Pensacola already. A bunch of folks are hopping on a bus tomorrow to go to Tallahassee for the special legislative session to tell them, you know, get rid of these vaccine mandates. Get rid of mandates, okay? As someone said on One American News on their weekend briefing, you know, a president tries to persuade you to do something. A dictator mandates it. And so that's the difference. We're not a dictatorship. So these mandates, you know, on their face are illegal simply because they're mandates. That's not how the government works. And even if they were, it would be illegal for the federal government to do it. It would have to come from the state. And even then, I would challenge the state's ability to do it if they in any way violate your constitutional rights. Because you could take the worst emergency in the world, still preserve your rights, and solve it. Okay? Especially if you persuade people that it's really in their interest to, you know, stay at home, take a vaccine, walk down the businesses. If you persuade people to do it, it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense, you know. But the fact is it didn't make sense that the virus was a temporary thing. It was going to come and go like pretty much every other virus does. It wasn't that deadly. And for most people, over 99%, you know, the effects at worst are going to be moderate. Well, moderate, what, you spend a couple of days sick? Yeah, is that bad? Yeah, it's not great, but it's knowing your death unless you're particularly vulnerable, and those are the folks that need protecting. So something's happening out there. And like I say, when that poll says that the number one thing people want the Brandon coup to do is just leave office. That's really significant. I've never seen that in a poll before. People speaking of a school boards once they saw what their kids were learning from the Zoom calls because the teachers were stupid enough to go along with their union and lock down. The Oklahoma National Guard that has said, we're not vaccinating anybody with a mandate. Screw you, Brandon. You know, or basically F you, Brandon, is what they're really saying. And all these places all over the country, the companies that are defying it, the protests outside Ascension Sacred Heart. Ah, there's my bell. All these things are happening, and I'm really encouraged. Jean?
Greg, I have nothing important to say except I just wanted to comment. And that was, you talk about Biden and people saying that just resign. I mean, we're just not talking Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Or just to get out of office. That's saying a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell me more. What do you think?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What you say is important. Never sell yourself short. That goes for anybody else who wants to call.
The thing is, it wasn't important as far as – didn't add to the conversation. I just wanted to give you my personal opinion for the fact that – I mean, can you imagine – I mean, I guess realistically, I don't think he – he's in a different world. I think him and Jill are both in a different world than most people. If someone would say to me, or, you know, a large number of people, you just need to resign, that would be devastating to me. And
you
I shouldn't
let
it be, but it would be. But with him, I don't think he cares. I think he just thinks he's just all that and a piece of bread, too, or something. I don't know, but it's like... I don't think he's got a good aware. I mean, I don't know if he's got an overinflamed ego. I don't even think that's it. I just think, I don't know. I think he probably just thinks that it's everybody else's issue that, you know, that they want him to resign and they just don't know how good he's really doing. I'm like, I don't know.
That's interesting. Do you think he even got the results of that poll? I think they probably sheltered it from him. I don't think he ever saw it. That'd be my guess.
That's probably true.
Yeah, but you make a really good point. Independents and Democrats, was it 28% of Democrats and I think 44% of independents want them out of there? I mean, we obviously want the Republicans are going to say so. But what's interesting is where's the Republican Party championing this in a press conference? I mean, this should be front page news. The Republicans should be right there and not Kevin McCarthy because he's basically Paul Ryan, you know, with a different suit and hair. You know, he's going to be every bit the deep state operative that Paul Ryan was, and he will sabotage the House if the House actually goes Republican. If they appoint Kevin McCarthy, it's just as bad as putting Paul Ryan in. There will be no Republican House coordinated action because he'll stop it all. Because he's a rhino. He's just very good at not looking like one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was listening to something over the weekend, and oh my God, the person just bashed Marjorie Taylor Greene and Hair Gel Boy from Florida. Oh my God. He basically said they're useless. And I'm just like, I'm beginning to think the same thing. Matt Gaetz, where is he? You know, he's out doing, you know, he just does things to make himself look good. And if there's not that chance, then he's like missing in action.
No, I need to go back to Action Radio, and I'll be, and this time I will be arrogant, because when we talked, when we had ideas, and when I was able to introduce him to things, of course, he's never going to hear anywhere else, because that's what we do here. We are, and he called us the Ideas Factory. You know, we had a fabulous working relationship where we could talk about things, and he could take those to Congress. He could take those questions. And I'm not saying he doesn't have original thoughts on his own. He does. I'm not, you know, I didn't give him everything. But the thing was, but we opened up possibilities that, all the other shows, how you doing, Mr. Congressman? And, what do you think of this issue? Are you going to tell us the same thing you've told everybody else? And we're going to ask you the same question everybody else asks. And I didn't do that. You know, the questions that we had and the issues we talked about were new and different and serious. And we talked about, abolishing the FBI or at least overhauling them. We talked about the Mueller commission as the insurance policy 6 months before anybody else did. You know, we gave him the mandatory citizenship bill on the census, mandatory citizenship question on the census bill, when nobody else was talking about it. You know, so we've been really far ahead. And quite honestly, he'd be better served, I think, and so would we, of course, if he would come back, call the show, and let's start exchanging ideas again, because he had a lot of ideas for us. But that's the kind of thing that gets going. But it's the hair gel. I made that comment at the rally. It actually got a pretty good laugh, too. But, put down the hair gel and go back to being yourself and stop trying to be a media star and start doing your job. That's why I don't seek public attention. I mean, I really don't. In fact, I'm avoiding it actually probably more than I should. But, I spoke at the rally because it was necessary. It was a good thing to do. And I got to introduce people to Action Radio again and present two very critical bills. And so I was hoping they would pick up on that. And we're still, like I said, we talked about that earlier, how I need to do a better job of getting the message out. But, yeah, Gates and now what's Marjorie Taylor Greene doing? Do you think she's too much been too much seduced by the dark side and not enough on the legislative end? I mean, has she put forward any bills?
No. But I don't know what she's doing recently. I know she did go to D.C. and visit the January 6th people in prison, which that's sad in itself. But, yeah, this person had no time for either of them anymore. They're basically just – they're all fluff. And I think that's pretty much true. It's like we need someone in there that's going to take the bull by the horns. Let's get things done versus talk. You know, you can't say that, okay, just because you're Republican, you can't get anything done. People will work with you.
Now, this is something I was thinking of as you were talking. Does it make sense that this actually might be a tactic? You apply to their ego. You put them on all these big shows. You give them a large audience to talk to, and they do the hair gel or something to make themselves more, politically acceptable. And it's a way to take them away from what they used to do, which is challenge authority. You know, Gates was at his best when he was introducing novel bills. Not ours, just necessarily, but, when he was really, working on some serious legislation and when he was in committee hearings, questioning Biden people, Obama people, corrupt people. I mean, he was really good at that. He's a lawyer. I mean, he's not a dummy. But I think this is a way to neutralize conservatives is to make them media stars. Jacob Chavis from Utah, is now on Fox News instead of in Congress. I think he was much more effective in Congress, quite frankly. News is good, but news without purpose, news without solutions, to me, is a waste of time. I mean, it's good, but it's not great. And I'm hoping to make Action Radio great because not only do we have news, but we also act on it, and we pick the stories that where we can do something about it. And one of the ways we can do things, this is why I'm doing the press releases, hoping to entice Matt Gaetz and some other members of Congress into calling the show so that we can go over the future and stop dwelling in the past. Because the past ain't working.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Learn from your past, but move on. Exactly.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, we got a little bit of time. Folks, took about another half hour before Peter Pryde joins. Again, next week, we've got a really special guest, Chancy Taylor. And she is an advocate who wants to really be one without without a whole lot of knowledge of how to do it. And so we're going to take all that enthusiasm. And I'm going to teach her to be a citizen legislator and lobbyist. It's going to be great. And this, of course, will teach everybody else, too. And, of course, anybody else is welcome to call the show and see if we can help you as well. All right. I want to get back to the court case a little bit, unless anybody has anything else they particularly want to talk about. I mean, it's free-for-all, so feel free. It looks like we've got let me see here. I'm going to switch that over. Here we go. All right. So the court case. And, of course, you're bored with the court case. Tell me to move on. I mean, call me up. I mean, we're here. All right. So, but I found this fascinating. This is the Fifth Circuit Court. This is their second opinion forcing the OSHA not to do anything further. On this mandate. They basically put the mandate on hold. So you can't touch it. You can't act on it. You have no authority to go forward to do anything. So there is no mandate right now. Okay, the Fifth Circuit Court said there's no mandate. So any boss that tells you, well, you have to comply with the mandate. It's like, well, what mandate? Well, the Biden press conference mandate. That's not a mandate. that was a press conference, okay? It's gone. It doesn't exist until the court, you know, goes forward and does something about it. Here's a, but I want to read this whole section. I got a couple of sections here I've sort of picked out as I was listening to our founding moments. The court said, equally problematic, however, is that it remains unclear that COVID-19, however tragic and devastating the pandemic has been, poses the kind of grave danger, you know, Section 655 contemplates. And then, of course, case there, you know, noting that OSHA itself once concluded that to be a grave danger, it is not sufficient that a chemical such as cadmium can cause cancer or kidney damage at a high level of exposure. Since for starters, the mandate itself, this is the vaccine mandate, itself concedes that the efforts of COVID-19 may range from mild to critical. Oh, wait a minute. If the effects of COVID-19 are mild, how can that be an emergency, right? This is what they're saying. As important, however, the status of the spread of the virus has varied since the president, well, I can't say that, we'll just say Brandon, announced the general parameters of the mandate in September. And, of course, this all assumes that COVID-19 poses any significant danger to workers to begin with. This is amazing the court's even saying this, right? This is for the more than 78% of Americans aged 12 and older, either fully or partially inoculated against it, the virus poses, as the administration assures us, little risk at all. Okay, so the court just said, dudes, you know, you're pushing a mandate, but you said it's not, you've already said your mandate isn't necessary. Why are you pushing it? Okay, that's grounds to dump it right there. Right. And it says little risk at all. COVID-19 vaccines authorized or approved. Okay, there's two different types, authorized and approved. Authorized is the emergency. Approved is when they actually sit down and actually go over it. There are no approved vaccines, by the way. They haven't been made yet. They're still using the authorized ones under the emergency. All right. So this is COVID-19 vaccines authorized or approved by the FDA effectively protect vaccinated people, vaccinated individuals against severe illness and death from COVID-19 if they work. Okay. So what the court is saying, well, you said these things work. Well, if they work, then there's no danger. If there's no danger, you don't need a mandate because enough people are vaccinated already. Okay. So you see how the court comes back to Brandon and says, you can't do what you're doing. You've said you don't need it. It's not an emergency. It doesn't qualify. You picked a government agency that has no authority. You know, they just keep stacking reason after reason after reason that these mandates are unconstitutional, illegal, and can't go forward. They've really built a good case here. Let me do a little bit more here. The administration's prior statements in this regard further belie the notion that COVID-19 poses the kind of emergency that allows OSHA to take the extreme measures of an ETS, that emergency, you know, temporary standard. In reviewing agency pronouncements, courts need not turn a blind eye to the statements of those issuing such pronouncements. Let me see if I can here we go. In fact, courts have an affirmative duty not to do so. It is thus critical to note that the mandate makes no serious attempt to explain why OSHA and the president himself were against vaccine mandates before they were for one. So this just cracked me up. I said, wait a minute. So now they've called out Brandon for saying, wait a minute, you guys were against the mandate. What changed here? You know, and it just keeps going on and on. So OSHA prefers to encourage rather than try and force government coercion. Let me see if I can get you. There were some really interesting things here on the differences in people. So I'm going to skip down a little bit. So here we go. So we next consider the necessity of the mandate. The mandate is staggeringly overbroad. The strong words from a court. Okay, this is applying to 2 out of 3 private sector employees in America in workplaces as diverse as the country itself, the mandate fails to consider what is perhaps the most salient fact of all, the ongoing threat of COVID-19 is more dangerous to some employees than to other employees. And that goes to equal protection in the 14th Amendment. That's what they're talking about here. He says, all right, this is all else equal, a 28-year-old trucker spending the bulk of his workday in the solitude of his cab is simply less vulnerable to COVID-19 than a 62-year-old prison janitor. Likewise, a naturally immune unvaccinated worker is presumably at less risk than an unvaccinated worker who has never had the virus. That's why I talk about naturally immune. They're assuming you've already had it, okay? The list goes on, but one constant remains. The mandate fails almost completely to address or even respond to much of this reality and common sense. There we go. So I don't know if I read anything further on that. So it goes on. But that's basically it, okay? So it's unequally applied. They don't have the authority to do it. They picked the wrong agency. It's arbitrary and capricious. They said the vaccines work. Most people are vaccinated. It's not that great a danger, yada, yada, on and on. Let me give you the final ruling here, and then we can maybe try something else. So I'm going to skip all this wonderful language. You really should read the court case. It is fascinating, absolutely fascinating. So here's the conclusion. This is for these reasons, the petitioner's motion for a stay pending review is granted. So it's a stay on the mandate. Enforcement of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's COVID-19 vaccination and testing emergency temporary standard remains stayed pending adequate judicial review of the petitioner's underlying motions for a permanent injunction. This is the key. In addition, it is further ordered that OSHA take no steps to implement or enforce the mandate until further court order. Y'all got that? So if anybody says, well, there's a mandate, you can say, well, you know, I heard the Fifth Circuit opinion on Action Radio. There is no mandate. And just read the court case yourself. It's not hard to find. Fifth Circuit Court. This is the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. The docket number is 21-60845, filed November 12, 2021, Lyle W. Case Clerk. Case number 21-60845. That's it. United States Court of Appeals. You can just, this is how I found it. Just look up, you know, U.S. Court of Appeals, Fifth Circuit, vaccine mandate opinion. Piece of cake, simple, easy peasy. Okay. There we go. All right, let me play out my Christmas piece, which I'm having way too much fun with. I made this last year, but a lot of it applies to this year. So I think we should have a little bit of fun before we get to more conversation. We got Gene. Anybody else wants to join us? 215-383-3832. And tomorrow I'll see if I can get some live people going to the rally. And of course, the report from the rally at any point tomorrow, you know, before we get off the air. All right, let's play this and I'll be right back. Hello, everyone. It's that time of year again. So here is just a friendly little message from your Action Radio revolutionaries. In preparation for Christmas and New Year's, we have just a few ideas and suggestions to make your holiday complete. Granted, these are times of adversity brought about by bureaucrats in what we affectionately call the leftist lockdown orgasmic power trip. But don't let a completely illegal, martial law style abdication and removal of your constitutional rights get in the way of a decent glass of eggnog with friends. After all, 6-foot social distancing is a completely false concept for a virus that can linger in the air for hours in aerosol form, can be sneezed well over 200 feet, can travel through an entire 10-story building's central air system in a couple of minutes, and goes through a mask like a mosquito through a chain-link fence. So, no matter what you do, everyone is getting exposed sometime. Leaving the healthy people alone accomplishes this in about 10 weeks. So, this should have been done the end of May. Speaking of masks, besides being a violation of your Fourth Amendment rights against seizure of your person, in this case, your face, without due process, the state can't make you wear a mask. So, go home if you're sick, but if not, go free face, as all real Americans are doing, and enjoy the Christmas season. Apparently, there is the deplorable lack of New Year's resolutions this year. Well, I have one. To resist. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to restore and rejuvenate that inner rugged individual the left has tried so hard to put behind a mask and lockdown, and I'm going to resist. So, you find a creative way to resist, there's your revolution resolution. Remember, folks, those Twilight Zone episodes where people wore masks? They were supposed to make you think, not make you copy them. Family values should be emphasized this Christmas with the traditions that bind us together. Sit as close as you can at dinner. Remember those wet kisses from Grandma when you were a kid? Engage in spirited debates. Don't forget to use serving dishes where everyone sticks their own personal fork and spoon in, all in the interest of sharing. Remind everyone that closing churches violates the First Amendment. Closing businesses without criminal convictions violates our Fifth Amendment right to life, liberty, and property. And closing schools denies our kids their right to an education. So, you may want to point that out to your governors and mayors this festive season so they understand their transgressions and can repent. I would have suggested you go to New York this year, but quite frankly, they don't have the balls to celebrate New Year's. No, really, the ball isn't dropping. Maybe we should rename Times Square Tiananmen Square West. Remember that there are many great gifts you can share this Christmas, particularly AR-15s and AK-47s. Those tend to warm the heart. As we say at Action Radio, world peace through strength. Just remember that everything the government tells you is wrong. So if you want to avoid COVID, don't take the vaccine. Go to the beach instead. Get that sunshine and vitamin D. Stay away from home. Engage in commerce and business. Travel as much as you can. Work out at crowded gyms.
drive extensively, preferably with the windows open, patronize businesses that are in open rebellion, and resist, resist, resist the doctor dictatorship. In closing, let me just say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Hanukkah. Muslims, you don't have a holiday at this time, so just go eat Chinese food on Christmas Eve and meet some really nice Jewish folks. Hey, they might be your neighbors. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. Who says we don't have fun here? I actually made it last, but a surprising amount of that still applies. Jean, do you like my little piece? Let's see if I can get her live. I may have to make her line live here. Let me see if I can do this. Yeah, let's try this.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Thank you. Yeah, I just got the last little bit there. Yeah, all right, so you're all set. Okay, so I need to do more of those. In fact, I still have to make my my Billy Bob real truck noises for those real men that want to drive an electric truck but have it sound like a real truck. So that's those are some of the things we'll be doing. But I made a bunch of pieces during the lockdown. I mean, I was really frustrated, really angry, really disgusted with what was going on. And when I get mad, I get creative. This is what Action Radio is all about. So a little expression of creativity here, and there'll be more. I mean, I have many that I want to make because it's fun. And besides, I went to a junior college to learn how to do this, or actually a community college. So folks, no matter what age you are, let me put a plug in for community colleges, junior colleges, associate degrees, things like that. I don't care what age you are. If you want to try something new, and I did, I wanted to get into talk radio, but I figured I might have to be a producer before I got my own show. And so I went to my local Ohlone College, which is in Fremont in California. It's in the San Francisco Bay Area. And they had a radio broadcast course, and they have their own college radio station. A lot of these smaller community colleges have, college radio. And it was fascinating. It was funny as hell because you got my deep, at the time 50s, year old age voice and all these kids. So you have all these kid DJs and be like, and welcome to Ohlone College Radio. It was hysterical in contrast, but it was experience. I was playing Demi Lovato. I was playing people I'd never heard of, it was fascinating. All these singers. And I said, those are the kids are listening to. Interesting. Anyway. So community colleges, if you want a career change, get some skills and just go for it. You don't need a huge 4-year degree, depending on what you want to do. All right. The ACLU. Now, we've had the ACLU on the show. In fact, I had a woman who's like vice director of the ACLU in Miami. And it was fascinating. We agreed on some stuff, disagreed on more stuff, but it was a really great interview. And this is back at WBY. So the ACLU, they can do the right thing, but they're sort of avoiding it because they're getting too much caught up in loyalty and forgetting their loyalty to the Constitution. But they did do something really interesting with Project Veritas. Okay, so as you know, Project Veritas, one of the reporters, was raided to try and, because the FBI is now acting as the secret police, the KGB, for the Brandon coup. And what they did was they raided in the pre-dawn hours. They bust into this, Project Veritas reporter's apartment looking for Ashley Brandon's diary. And so, that's privileged information if they have it, unless, of course, they stole it. Now, if they stole it, it's stolen property. That's different. But that's what they're alleging. And they alleged that so they could get a search warrant, so they could go bust in this guy's apartment. This is political intimidation. This is pure Gestapo, KGB, SAVAK, pick the secret police force, it's the same kind of thing. Yeah, go ahead. What's up, Jean?
I was going to say it wasn't just a reporter. This was James O'Keefe or whatever his name is, the guy that actually started it.
Was James O'Keefe was raided? Oh, I didn't think it was him.
Yes, and it was, and it was Ashley. That's Biden's daughter's diary, and supposedly they're saying they don't even think it's her real diary. But what they did was, insane, insane, insane.
Yeah, yeah. No, thanks for the correction here. In fact, you're right. And let me go through this. This is the ACLU commented November 14th, so that was yesterday. Yeah, yes, I'm just checking my calendar. New York. The following is a statement from Brian House, that's HAUSS, senior staff attorney with the ACLU's Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project, in response to reports of an FBI raid on Project Veritas founder James O'Keefe. Yeah, so there you go. You're absolutely right. So this was intimidation. This is about trying. Of course, James O'Keefe, you don't intimidate James O'Keefe. See, to him, this is like a badge of honor. it's like, okay, you raided my apartment. Great. Thank you. Thanks for showing me your true colors, KGB, FBI.
anyway, but ACLU has not traditionally been, you know, aligned with conservative causes. They've been, you know, good on the Constitution on traditionally liberal causes, but that's not right. If you're either with the Constitution, you know, all the time or not, you can't be selective. You can't like free speech and hate gun rights. It doesn't work that way. If you believe in true freedom, if you believe in selective freedom, that's different. Anyway, so the quote from the ACLU: Project Veritas has engaged in disgraceful deceptions, and reasonable observers might not consider their activities to be journalism at all. Okay, well, we know where the ACLU stands. Nevertheless, and here's where it gets interesting: the precedent set in this case could have serious consequences for press freedom, unless the government had good reason to believe that Project Veritas employees were directly involved in the diary. It should not have subjected them to invasive searches and seizures. We urge the court to appoint a special master to ensure that law enforcement officers review only those materials that were lawfully seized and that are directly relevant to a legitimate criminal investigation. In other words, it's right out of the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure. The warrant has to describe the places to be searched and the things to be seized. And that is the extent of the warrants are a limitation on what you're doing. And then, of course, that ridiculous saying comes up, well, if you have nothing to hide, then you shouldn't be afraid of anything. And that's total BS, because the government can manufacture things. They can make up charges. There are so many laws out there. Everybody's guilty of something. So it's not a question of what you have to hide. The question is what you have to preserve your liberty. It's not up to us to hide things. It's up to the government to prove things. And if you're hiding something and they can prove it, then you're wrong. You know, but if it's just you're going about your normal business, you have a right to be safe and secure in your person, home, papers, and effects. And I would also include arms in that as well. Your right to be secure in your arms, safeguarded from the federal government. It's one of our most basic rights that the government can't use. Well, if you got nothing to hide, what are you worried about? It doesn't exist, because we're innocent until proven guilty. I just found that fascinating. The ACL would make that statement. But the first one's kind of funny. Project Veritas is engaged in disgraceful deceptions, and reasonable observers might not consider their activities to be journalism at all. I think it's kind of funny. Gene, what do you think? This is a great comment.
Oh, I agree with you. It's pretty scary to think that the Biden and the FBI and the Justice Department is worrying about something supposedly that they got her diary. They didn't go to the hotel room and pick it up. Someone gave it to them. And also, they did not, Project Veritas did not publish anything about the diary. So it's like, what is going on? And why are they looking at that and they're not looking at the real issues and the real things that are going on in this country? I guess that's because shows just, once again, how incompetent and inept they are. They don't know what lawlessness is from law-abiding citizens.
Yeah.
It's just their agenda.
Yeah. I want to sort of pose a moral dilemma to you here, because Project Veritas to me has always walked a thin line. And I think, you know, because I'm not, you know, in favor of recordings that are undisclosed. In other words, secret recordings. Because people, you know, if you can be recorded anytime without your knowledge, you know, I worry about that. But the difference is these are public figures generally. So, you know, if they're recording regular folks, you know, and generally the people that I've seen them record are either public figures or high corporate figures that impact the public in significant ways. Like I say, so my moral dilemma is, although I'm personally opposed to recordings without knowledge, I don't know how else to get this information. So my moral dilemma is, are they doing the right thing the wrong way? Are they doing the wrong thing the right way? But I still like this information, especially when it concerns public figures or like election officials, when they're at a polling place and they record someone saying, yeah, you don't need an ID. Come on in. Here, let's give you a ballot. Here, fill this out. Or that recording they did with Acorn. I remember that famous recording. Here's how you cheat on your taxes. You take this form and you do this and you do this. And they recorded that, you know, and that's how Acorn a lot of those recordings were responsible for having Acorn be disbanded. Now they came back in other forms, but they're not doing the same political activism they did before. So the moral dilemma, is it okay to secretly record people if you're exposing corruption that might not be exposed any other way? What do you think?
Very true. Yeah. I mean, you're right what you're getting at, though. The thing is, oh my gosh, the thing is what they're bringing up and what they're discovering, what they're bringing to light, making people aware, it's very important for us to be aware of. It's just, yeah, you're right how they go about it. So my thinking is, if people are on the up and up, it shouldn't matter if you're being recorded or not, because you're doing the truth. You're following the truth. You're being legal in what you're dealing with.
Well, but then again, you have a right to be safe and secure in your home, person's papers in effect. And you have a right to, but they're not a law enforcement agency, they're not a government agency. So are they spying? But I mean, people get spied on all the time. You look at the paparazzi, and that's called freedom of the press. So it's a gray line. I don't think it's cut and dry, but I'll tell you, there's a reason that James O'Keefe started Project Veritas and I started Action Radio. You know, I am completely comfortable with everything that we do. I don't think there's any deception. In fact, if anything, we're far more transparent than the regular legislatures. You know, everything we do is on the open. Everything we do is broadcast. I don't have secret, agendas that I'm working, unless there's an investigation, which has to remain secret because I can't present the stuff until, we verify it and we get it out there. That's just normal journalism. But in terms of secret bills, I'm not negotiating with legislators, making secret proposals and secret deals, to get certain things done. We don't do that. Everything we do, every bill that we have is out in the open and is available for public comment. So I'm completely comfortable with what we do. I would not be completely comfortable doing what Project Veritas does, which is why, I don't work for Project Veritas, although I thought of it at one point. But I thought it'd be too obvious. I don't blend well into the background. So I wouldn't be a good person for that. But I had that moral dilemma. Is it lawful, moral, and ethical to record people, even though you're recording people doing horrible things, like Facebook algorithm censorship and other stuff like that? So that's why I say I like what they do, but...
Well, right. That's true. Yeah. Then we have to question it. And definitely, that is true. Because, personally, I what I say, whenever I say something, I hold myself accountable. And later, mm-hmm. even after you look back or I look back and like, I didn't say that exactly how I wanted. The thing is, I still, I will take the consequences of my words. However, but look at what I do compared to what some of these people do. Sometimes they're just talking and mm-hmm. they're saying things, but they don't anticipate it to be known to the masses.
Yeah, that's true. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting what's transparent and what isn't, especially with government. And my experience in my internship opened my eyes to what goes on behind the scenes and things you wouldn't believe. Yeah. It's pretty incredible. Yeah. Go ahead.
Right. And as I say, there's so much going on in government that we, the people, have no clue. I mean, you talk about, just military-wise and stuff like that, that we can't know for public safety and things like that. And so, it's just really interesting. But then that brings up a good point. If someone says something, they don't agree with it, they may not know all the other facts going into that. And to put it in public, that may not be, the best, smartest way of doing it.
No, that's true. That's very true. I think that's why you have to be public with what you do. Legislature, same thing. And then the legislature, they will publish a bill as is submitted, and then it goes to committee hearing. And if there are amendments, they will publish the amendments. And then when it goes to consideration at the House, if they pass it, they publish it as passed. Then it goes to the Senate. If the Senate takes it in committee hearing and they amend it, they will publish those amendments. So we do the same thing. So a lot of the model for what I do with our legislation is based on how they do it. Because I like the consistency, and I think they got it right. And I'm all in favor of modeling something they got right. So at every step along the way, their legislation, you can trace it. You can track it. You can see the progression. Same thing here. The reason I leave comments on our site when people propose amendments to a bill that I put in is you can see where it started. And I keep the original forms of all the bills. Anyway, just in case I need them for reference. But for the most part, as we amend things, as we change things, as we do anything different, you'll usually have a record of what went on before it. If you have, like I say, from the comments people make and the things people post, if it comes in from somewhere else, if I just change it, then I'll just change it. And usually I change it for the better, but I keep the original. So yeah, that's transparency. You want to see how we do things? WriteYourLaws.com. Excuse me. It's all there. I've been talking too much this morning. I can feel it already. Fortunately, Dr. Peter Pry will come on. He's really great at talking, so I have a chance to kind of kick back a little bit and listen to what he has to say. And Gene, you can ask some questions too. Don't be shy about that. You know, just it's really instructive for you to ask questions of Dr. Pry, because you're not a nuclear weapons expert. I'm not either. I studied military things maybe more than you have, but that's only just because I was interested. You know, and so, but it's good to have. You know, when you hear for the first time that China has 4,000 nuclear weapons, new ones, and we're just sitting back talking about arms control, that should scare the hell out of you. And so it'd be good for him to know that, to get your perspective, I think. Okay, let me, if you have a comment into this, just tell me, and I'll definitely switch back to you. Yeah, I found something here. There's going to be a bunch of bills that the governor's released. I'm going to try and get those today. And see what the governor, because everybody writes stories about what the governor released, but I haven't got the actual copies of the bills. And that's where the truth is. The truth is in the actual bill language, which I'm kind of a nerd. I like reading. So I want to, what we're going to do tomorrow is we're going to compare their bills to our bills and see which ones are better. I think ours are better. But if ours aren't better, I'll say support their bills. Got no problem with that. But at least I get our bills. I get people thinking about how to do the process with our bills. South Dade News Leader, your source for local news in South Dade. That would be south of Miami. Bethany Blankley, TCS. I'm not sure what that means. November 12th, 2021. Said DeSantis announces bills for special session. That's the one starting today. As groups organize in opposition to vaccine mandates. This Florida Governor Ron DeSantis released a slate of bills he'd like to see passed during the special legislative session that begins Monday. So you know the legislature's already got this. All the backroom deals have already been done, folks, okay? So the session is for the public. The real work has already been done. I have a feeling the legislature already knows what bills are going to pass. That would be my guess. Anyway, Florida Governor releases a slate of bills he'd like to see passed. Okay. The bills are related to vaccine mandates, as a coalition of groups from across the state will be holding a rally next week. That's tomorrow. In support of banning such mandates. DeSantis has been an outspoken critic of insurrectionist Joe Brandon, my words, and against vaccine mandates, said on Monday the proposed bills are probably the strongest protections for both private and public sector employees anywhere in the country. I don't think he's read mine yet. Anyway, he says he has argued for the laws to hold businesses liable for any medical harm resulting from a vaccine mandate, as well as other stipulations. See, that's what you were talking about, Gene. If you get hurt or injured or crippled or, God forbid, killed by these vaccines, you can hold your company responsible. And that's critical for stopping these mandates, because for them, it's more cost effective, I think, to have the mandate, because they're probably getting paid off from the government somewhere. I'm not sure how. Or they're getting extorted from Brandon. And in fact, I put the call out for anybody who knows. But yeah, but it's right there. Now, whether it's in it or not, we don't know. But this is what the governor is requesting. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and the thing is, even with kids and wearing masks in school, that they're getting, the schools are getting money for that. How sad is that? They're using kids as pawns.
See, now, do you have sources on that? Because I'd love to find out who's paying off the schools to make kids wear masks. Any information you have on that?
I'll have to check to see if I can find it in writing. But I was listening to a couple news things last week, and they both said it. So I'll see if I can officially find something.
Yeah, see, that's our next big investigation, is who's paying off these people to do these mandates. Because I figure they're either getting money to do it, or they're being extorted to do it, or both. Because it's not in a company's interest to force a mandate, you know, and lose a third of their workforce. I mean, the companies aren't stupid. That's bad business. I mean, in fact, the court case even talked about that. So what do you think of that court language? I didn't read the whole case, but you might want to, you know, check it out sometime. But just that entire court opinion from the Fifth Circuit, isn't it fabulous? I think it's fabulous.
I liked it. Yeah, it made a lot of sense.
Yeah. And people don't read court. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's like a lot of people don't read court cases or what they say. I mean, I don't, because a lot of times, like, I don't understand what the wording is. You know, it's like, can't make sense out of it. But that was pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I like it. And I wish people would read it. That'd be a great case study for anybody, college level, even high school level, to sort of take a look. Because it's very descriptive, and it's very, you know, I love that expression, you know, do this or hit the road. I mean, I cracked up the first time I read that. I said, this is the court case? I said, these guys are great. I wish I could interview the judges on the Fifth Circuit. I mean, I think they'd be fabulous to talk to. So we got these hidden, you know, really brilliant, witty personalities hiding on the bench. And I don't know if I could ever do that. If you're bored sometime, you know, call up the Fifth Circuit and say, hey, see if we can interview the justices. I can be looking up bills for most of the day, and I'm sure you're working and stuff. But, yeah, that's a, we'll just put it on our list of things to do. All right, let me get back to this article here.
Hey, I got a question.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
This has nothing to do with that article. But DeSantis
feel free.
Was he, when he said he was going to take the illegals coming in by planes, was he serious that he was going to send them back up towards Delaware where Biden is?
Good question. I would say unless it's in legislation or unless he writes an executive order to do so, it's more a political consideration. All right. Now, having said that, we actually have a bill before the Santa Rosa County Commissioners here in Santa Rosa County, Florida, that's the Illegal Alien Free Zone Bill that would exactly do what you're talking about. In other words, it would seize the buses and the airplanes, and say they landed, say Escambia County next door to us, which is where Pensacola is. So Pensacola has an illegal alien free zone bill, the same one that we're trying to pass here. And a jet from the government lands, in Pensacola Airport, bringing illegal aliens. Okay, that could be seized, by the county. So look, you landed here, we're not letting you take off. We're stealing your damn jet. Because you brought illegal aliens to our county, and we have a county ordinance against illegal aliens being here, and anybody that brings in AIDS, comforts, or in any way helps illegal aliens, we're going to take your stuff. Okay, so that's what they should do. Josie's here. We got only just it's time for Dr. Pry, who's on the line also. But let me just take a quick call from Josie on this matter of illegal alien asset forfeiture.
Hey,
Josie, just
quickly. Good morning. Good morning, uh-huh. Greg. And
good morning.
Just quickly, I wanted to say one of the RNs from West Florida just told me on Friday that they got an email saying that as of December the 5th, everyone have to be vaccinated at West Florida Hospital here in Pensacola. So
okay,
a lot of
what?
People just the mandate that the hospital wants.
Okay, now we just went over you heard that we've gone over the court case. We've gone over the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling that OSHA can take no action, none, zip, zero, on this alleged mandate. The mandate currently does not exist. There's a stay on it, so there is no mandate. So I would tell the nurses to review that. Go ahead.
But Fox just, I just got another small statement, a report from Fox. One of my friends sent me that it says the mandate is staying. The court are going with Biden. Yes. So
who's
I just got
Biden?
It a few minutes ago from Miami.
This is
my friend.
Let me try to understand this. Which court?
They're going to keep the mandates according to what Joe Biden wants. That's what the court is doing right now.
Which part?
But anyway, I just wanted for you to let you know for a lot of people that just moved from Sacred Heart to West Florida, running away from the vaccine, and all these idiots are doing the same thing. So anyway.
I want to know which court because I want to. This is serious stuff. Is some court trying to overrule the Fifth Circuit? I don't think they can do that. They've already put a stay on this.
I'll send you the video in a minute. Okay.
Okay. In the meantime.
All right. God bless. Talk to you tomorrow.
In the meantime, we're going to talk national security. Thanks, Josie.
Yes.
Appreciate it. Are you going to the rally tomorrow or no? Just out of curiosity. Oh, she dropped. Well, I'll find out later. I'll say this is going to be one of the busier days between shows. All right. Let's get to national security. I'll be right back.
What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry.
Yes, we've been having a fascinating time going through the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals decision to put a stay on the mandate. And the fact that Josie's saying these companies, you know, are still pushing a mandate, it's like, it doesn't exist. There is no mandate. You know, I'd be curious. Gene, if you have a chance, if you can take a look and see if some court in Miami or somebody else has tried to overrule the Fifth Circuit, I'd be really curious about that. But currently, as far as I know, the Fifth Circuit, you know, got in there. They got their ruling in. And there is no mandate. Oh, let me make Dr. of course, helps to make Dr. Ferrari's line live. Sorry, I'm just talking away here. Okay, now you're live, sir. Have you had a chance to look at that opinion? Because it is the most fascinating and just down-to-earth, straightforward language, I think, court opinion I've ever read. It's really they did an amazing job with it. Go ahead, sir.
Are you asking me, Greg?
Yeah, I'm just curious. I don't know if you had a chance to. I don't know if you
no,
read court opinion.
No, that's out of my – that's not my area. I mean, I am concerned about it, of course, because it has to do with – preserving our domestic freedoms, but it's not the kind of thing I'm focused on, you know, which are the national security issues. And, you know, before we get into what I want to talk about today, which is the number of nuclear weapons that we're estimating for China today and in the future, I do want to mention that, you know, one of the things of concern in Washington, I don't know if the rest of the country, you know, is following this, but we're concerned again about possibly Russia invading Ukraine, and that they've, just like earlier in the spring, they claim to be conducting an exercise where they've mobilized hundreds of thousands of troops on the Ukrainian border. And Lukashenko, who's the dictator of Belarus, you know, a Russian ally that borders Poland and the Baltic states, has requested nuclear weapons be based in Belarus, facing Poland and Lithuania, you know, professing that he is concerned about a threat there. And this is, you know, Lukashenko is basically a puppet of the Russians. He actually has never even wanted Belarus to be independent. He's he's tried to get Russia to basically take Belarus, you know,
to
reincorporate it.
The Stalinist? Who is this guy?
You know, he's a Stalinist. He's an apparatchik that goes back to the USSR. And he's basically been the dictator of Belarus, you know, ever since it became so supposedly independent. You know, I mean, they have one of the worst records. Even the Democrats could learn about stealing elections from Lukashenko. You know,
that's scary.
So they're up there. They have these phony elections that result in super huge majorities for Lukashenko all the time, despite the fact that there have been mass protests against his regime. But Moscow keeps him in power, and his request for nuclear weapons is probably he's probably been told to do that so that the Russians can then respond to his request, you know, by deploying. They're talking about Iskander missiles. These are short range missiles that are for tactical nuclear warfare. That would then be. He's already got Iskanders that are probably nuclear armed. Well, it's not in Belarus proper, but there's a province called Kaliningrad. It's a city that is part of Russia. But it's not geographically contiguous to Russia. It's in Belarus and near the Baltic states, and there are Iskanders already there. So these would be positioning these things in a better position to hit other parts, to nuke other parts of Poland and the Baltic states, and probably the Czech Republic, the Czech Republic, and Slovakia as well, who are also NATO allies. You know, sort of turning Belarus into a nuclear aircraft carrier, you know, in that part of Europe, and that would make it. So it's another indicator, you know, that raises people's concerns about: is this the moment? Is Russia finally going to invade and do a big version of Crimea, you know, and take over the whole of Ukraine, you know, because it's doubtful that, it's going to be asking a lot of the U.S. and the NATO allies to risk a nuclear conflict. You know, Ukraine is not a part of NATO. You know, we do have security guarantees to them, But that's really raising the stakes, you know, if we end up getting into a situation where, you know, they end up using tactical nuclear weapons. So that's one thing I just wanted to mention.
No, I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Because who knows, tomorrow we could be in a major European war. It's a real possibility. Sorry.
Okay, I want to ask you a couple of questions on that because, this is fascinating. I got a world map here. I'm looking at Russia, and I'm looking at the countries that border the western side of Russia. You got Finland at the top, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Belarus, which you mentioned, Ukraine, and then it goes down the southern part. You've got Georgia and Azerbaijan. We have listeners in Azerbaijan now, so they popped up on the world map. Yeah, thank you. So it's fascinating that the places people are popping up, listening to our show at various times. But Ukraine is not a place I know a huge amount about. So if you can tell me why, is it because it's right on the border? And, of course, the next layer of countries, Poland, Czech Republic, Slovenia, Hungary, Romania. And they've got, was it Moldova or Moldova? Is it Moldova or Moldova? Yeah, Moldova.
Moldova.
So you've got this. So that's like the next line of countries. So you look at this in terms of waves. And then, of course, you get into Western Europe, Germany, you know, Austria. What do we got down here? Some other places, Croatia, Macedonia. You know, and then, of course, you get to the other countries, you know, France, Italy. You know, and you can see like lines across there. Now, I had the fortune when I was bumming around Europe at the age of 22, being a post-college liberal student, getting a real education. I met an Army lieutenant on a train, and he took me to the Fulda Gap. Okay, so I was actually right there. This is before the wall came down. This is before East Germany unified with West Germany. And I was right there on the border with East Germany. And you see this wide open plain. And he says, this is where the tanks, if the Warsaw Pact is going to come through with tanks, this is where they're going to come through. So I was right there. So I know what that looks like. It's this wide open plain, and it's like tank perfect. So I know, you know, if you refer to that region of the world, I know exactly, you know, what you're talking about. It's quite fascinating. But I want to get back to these other countries because they're the ones that are closest to Russia and I imagine easiest influence. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, that'd be the, I forgot what those, that they form a group of nations. Then you got Belarus and
those
Ukraine.
Those are the Baltic states.
Those are the Baltics. Okay. So I thought the Baltics were like Bulgaria, Serbia, those countries.
No. The Baltic states are near the Baltic Sea. Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania.
Okay.
I've been to all of these places that you've mentioned. I used to have a favor. When I was on the House Armed Services Committee, one of my part of my portfolio was NATO expansion. And before these countries were brought into NATO, the Armed Services Committee sent me over there to meet with their military staffs and political leaders to make an assessment about, are they ready to come into NATO? Is it our interests to bring them into NATO?
Okay.
And I ended up spending so much time there, I ended up with a favorite restaurant in places in Latvia. And they're really beautiful places. I mean, if people want to think about going on vacation, you might want to go there because the American dollar goes far. And one of the good things about, well, there's nothing good about communism, but the lack of development, the lack of economic development that happens under communism, mm-hmm. Left preserved these beautiful medieval cities, in those countries, so they don't have car traffic in the real inner part of the feudal era cities that go back to the 1300s, the 1200s, and you can actually walk around and see, you know, Western Europe doesn't look like that pretty anymore, you know, because free enterprise, you know, the building of suburbs, the building of buildings and everything, it erases the history. But it's still there and preserved in the deep freeze of communism, there are marvelous places to visit. And the cultural level is really amazingly high. I mean, you can, you know, we have the, here in the States, you've got the, you know, the occasional bum or indigent, you know, playing something very badly on a street corner. Mm-hmm. There, they actually have students, little orchestras, you know, on a street corner, you know, for pitched coins and things like that. And you can actually experience something that you would have to go to a symphony here in the United States, right on a street corner, in places like Latvia and Lithuania. But they're fascinating. I remember going up there. There was a ballistic missile early warning radar that the Soviets, it was really important, called I think it was called the Pechanga radar. I had been looking at it, you know, when I was the agency, you know, at satellite imagery, you know, for years and years, and we were all fascinated by that. But I actually got to go to the site, you know, after the fall of the wall and everything. Of course, the Russians had destroyed everything before they left. But still, it was fascinating to go there.
I want to ask you one more question on Ukraine.
Yeah, sure.
If I can.
Go on.
Why is this such a disputed area? I mean, I can see it right here. It's got Russia on one side. It's got Poland and Romania on the other side. They're kind of stuck there. You got Belarus, which is already under Lukashenko, basically like a Soviet satellite under the old, you know, USSR. And you got the Ukraine. Now, Ukraine's like the breadbasket. Isn't it the farmland? Isn't it the rich agricultural region? It's got Kiev, which I guess
is the rich agricultural region. A lot of the defense industries that the Soviet Union relied upon were
okay.
In Ukraine. Their most important ICBM, the SS-18 mod, the SS-18, the Satan 1, was manufactured in Ukraine. And that's where the factories and assembly lines were. Now they've rebuilt all that in Russia, and they're going to replace their Satan 1s with the Satan 2, but they would like to get all that back. There's a non-nuclear EMP weapons. I mean, these are just a few examples, you know.
Okay.
Their best design bureau was located in Ukraine, and it's still there. There's a guy named Yuri Tkach, you know, who is constantly going around the world proliferating, you know, selling non-nuclear EMP weapons to anybody who will buy them so that he can keep that design bureau in business. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really bad.
Thanks.
They would like to get that defense industrial base back. They'd like to get the breadbasket back, and they want the territory back because, you know, Gorbachev, the general staff in the Russian national security state, you know, which is what Putin is all about, never recognized. They were totally against. That's why they launched a coup against Gorbachev. They didn't want to give up any of that. They didn't want to give up the Warsaw Pact, let alone parts of the Russian Empire itself. You know, they feel the same way about owning Ukraine and Belarus and these other countries as China does about Taiwan.
Interesting.
You know,
that's a good parallel.
They regard them as legitimate. They regard them as essential to their own. They think the reason these places became independent was because of CIA plots and the nefarious influence of the Imperial West. That's how they rationalize it. All the parts that were of the original Russian Empire, they want it back, and they even prepositioned themselves to get it back before they left. I mean, you can tell, you know, and this is one of the things that I've always thought from a geopolitical standpoint, you know, you can tell just by looking at the map, you know.
Look at it right now.
Things are set up for some kind of a World War III in the future because it's a law of nature that nation states want their parts to be geographically contiguous, you know?
Right.
I mean, the situation, for example, when there was an East and West Pakistan, once upon a time there was an East and West Pakistan. Now, when a country is geographically divided like that, you know, East Pakistan and West Pakistan were separated by India. And India, to hurt Pakistan, you know, helped promulgate, you know, a independence movement in I guess it was East Pakistan, which is now, what is that country called? Anyway, it's not East Pakistan anymore. There was actually a war fought between Pakistan and India over that. And you've got little islands of the former Soviet Empire, like Kaliningrad, you know, this armed camp of a city that's got Iskander nuclear missiles in it, and it's not geographically contiguous to Russia. It's sitting out there, you know, near the Baltic states, in Belarus. Well, you mentioned Moldova. That's another one. You know, the Russians have got their 12th Army in Moldova. You know, Moldova is basically still occupied all these years later, you know, by a Russian army. And, you know, it's, is it independent? You know, I mean, so you've got these little islands of what was the Soviet Union and is now Russia, you know, sitting out there in Eastern Europe waiting for the red tide to come back, you know, and that's what that's all about. You know, they will, this was, they fought in the, from the Russian perspective, they won World War II. They won World War II. You know, we played a minor supporting role. They lost 30 million people, you know, and they see their security, regardless of international law and what's morally correct and all the rest, they see their, they want that, that, that shield. Not only do they believe they legitimately own these countries, but they also see it as vital to their national security to have as much of a buffer between themselves and the West as they can get, you know, taking...
Well, you can see on a map. You see on the map these different waves of these different nations, and you can see the different areas. Last question on Ukraine, though, because it looks like Kiev's closest, Moscow's closest city in Europe is Kiev, which is kind of interesting. Were they under the Tsar? Were they Russian territory under the Tsar, or were Ukraine and Belarus were these independent countries that were taken after the 1917 revolution?
Oh, they were part of Russia under the Tsar. The,
okay,
the
so that's what
we've been
that's
talking
what I think
about.
They own them. Yeah.
Ukraine had been part of the Russian Empire, you know, for centuries. And as a matter of fact, if you go back to the history of Russia, it actually begins in Ukraine. You know, the first capital was not Moscow. It was Kiev. They were called the Kievan Rus. And what is Russia today actually started in Ukraine. You know, so now the Ukrainians regard themselves as a different people, a separate people, you know, because their language is a little different and all the rest. But if you go back to before Ivan the Terrible, to the earliest, you know, to Russia in the Dark Ages, it actually began there. That's the beginning of their homeland. And now the modern Ukrainians don't see it that way, of course, especially after the terrible experience of communism, and they wanted to have independence. But, you know, Ukraine hasn't been an independent nation for centuries.
See, that makes a big difference, because if they were independent under the Tsar, then Russia would have no claim on them. But the fact that they've been subjected to the Russian Empire and the Tsars for however many centuries they have been, there's a sort of conditioning that goes with that, and there's a sort of ownership that Russians feel towards them. So they have to break away. If they want to be an independent nation, they've got to break not only the tradition with the communist governments, but they have to break the tradition with the Tsar, with the previous Tsar governments too, and say, no, we're independent. We're changing history now. And that's going to be interesting to see what happens. But I can see where the Russia could invade Ukraine, because they've got a nice big, you know, eastern border or with Russia. It's right there. And Moscow's not that far away, and some of these other cities, you know, most of eastern Russia or western Russia is right there, just to walk right into Ukraine. So I can see where the problems are now. Okay, interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, they're constantly afraid. I mean, Ukraine is constantly trying to join NATO, you know?
Okay.
And that is probably a red line for the Russian general staff, you know?
Okay.
You know, because from their point of view, they can't afford to have Ukraine join NATO. You know, it'll bring a hostile foreign power that, you know, right to the door, right to the gates of Moscow. And as we talked before, you know, within the last generation lost tens of millions of lives, you know, to reclaim, to push back Nazi Germany and reclaim that part of the Russian Empire. So this is a very big deal, what's going on now. You know, maybe it's a part of the fallout from Afghanistan, which you know, or, you know, it just might be another effort by the Russians to scare the bejesus out of NATO and the United States and demonstrate our weakness again, remind us of our weakness. But who knows what's going to happen? It's a perilous moment, especially this business about moving, you know, tactical nuclear missiles, the Iskander, you know, very sophisticated missile into Belarus, you know, to be opposite our frontline NATO states. And that, you know, we can't defend that area. I mean, that's, you know, we're obliged to be, well, when I came back from touring, you know, the Eastern Europe, my advice to the Armed Services Committee, and I actually sat down with the late, great Chairman Spence, had a personal conversation with him about this and my assessment. And I said, now this is not going to make me a popular guy, okay? You know, with all the American Poles and Hungarians out listening out there. But I told him I thought it would be a colossal mistake for the United States to incorporate, to bring these former Warsaw Pact countries into the NATO alliance, because we couldn't defend them. It meant that we were committing ourselves to a nuclear war, you know. That's the only way we could possibly defend them. And the American people, you know, don't want to get in a nuclear war for a country they can't find on a map. And, you know, these countries, their economies were so destroyed by communism, you know, they were never, or it's going to be a long time before they would be able to build up their own capable military forces. And they are not capable. Even today, even though Poland, for example, is in better shape than France and Germany, you know, they actually have more tanks and a bigger air force and they're probably better trained than France and Germany. You know, they're so close to Russia, you know, it's easy for Russia to project power into that part of the world. Even our own war games show us losing, in an effort to defend the frontline NATO states. Russia can take all of those countries over in 72 hours. That's what our own war games show.
Well, they're flat. And you just drive right over them, and Poland's flat. That's why it keeps getting invaded from Germany and Russia over the centuries.
Yeah, even, right, you know, even without
no natural barriers.
Nuclear weapons. Yeah, just think about it. I mean, you were talking about the fold the gap. I think that's something Americans need to remember. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about, during the height of the Cold War, when we were concerned about a Soviet invasion of Western Europe, we were hard-pressed to defend Western Europe, you know, with the Russians coming through the Fulda Gap. We were on the defensive, and the bad guys were projecting power into Western Europe. And even with us being on the defensive, we were having a hard time. It wasn't clear that we could defend Western Europe. Now we've committed ourselves to projecting power eastward. You know, I mean, historically, Napoleon, the Mongols, Napoleon, Hitler, you know, the idea of projecting power eastward into the teeth of the Russian army, how are we going to win? How are we going to do that, you know?
Especially with the winter. We're not going to survive the winter. Yeah.
Exactly. That's we've put ourselves in exactly the position that Napoleon was in, basically.
Napoleon, Hitler, Bismarck. They all make the same mistake.
Except our armed forces are not as big as the Grand Army that Napoleon had at his disposal. We're outnumbered by the Russians in every category, you know, with the NATO forces. So this is, you know, a very precarious, dangerous situation. Very tempting, you know, for the Russians to see this weak NATO states. You know,
well, they don't even
want
to defend themselves.
Opportunity. Pardon?
You got France and Germany. They won't even pay their NATO bills. They don't even want to defend themselves.
Yes, that's right.
What are we even doing there? I mean, you know, you can't help people that refuse to help themselves. It doesn't work. It's like Afghanistan. You can't make Afghanistan a Western democracy, which I thought was a stupid idea anyway, with people that want to remain a Sharia law backward, you know, crazy nation of goat herders with five-year-old wives. You're not going to change those people. And I wouldn't want to try.
Right.
If they're happy being who they are, that's fine, but don't attack us. You know, so you do the things that are necessary militarily. But I think the whole idea of NATO is actually kind of obsolete right now, because you've got all these Eastern nations. We can make allies. We could have an ally of Ukraine without promising to defend them. We don't promise to defend everybody we're allies with.
Unfortunately, we already promised to defend them. Bill Clinton did. you know, and the Bucharest agreement, because, you know, Ukraine used to be the third most powerful nuclear country in the world, because it had, it had Soviet missile armies on its territory. And
yes, they had to.
And in exchange for Ukraine giving up those nuclear weapons, they were given back to Russia. You know, the U.S. and Britain provided security guarantees. Russia also provided security guarantees, by the way, under the Bucharest memo, which is absurd, you know, because, you know, obviously the person, the state that the Ukraine was most concerned about was Russia. But
it's like a protection racket.
And that's one of the reasons.
It's like a mafia protection racket.
Yeah, that's
racket.
One
we'll
of
protect
the reasons
you from harm from us. So you pay us, you know,
Right. And that's one of the reasons why Russia, well, why we are seeing this long crucifixion of Ukraine, because it's, you know, what Russia is trying to do is demonstrate to the world that U.S. security guarantees are worthless, you know, by this, and undermine confidence in NATO and undermine confidence in U.S. security guarantees everywhere, you know. Yeah. So, you know, Bill Clinton probably should never have signed that thing. We probably shouldn't have. Now I have to say, when I met the people, you know, of Eastern Europe, of all these countries I was visiting, you know, it pulled at my heartstrings. These people wanted to be free. They had such confidence that America, you know, the United States, you know, would be able to protect them if the worst came to worst. They're wonderful people. And, you know, it kind of breaks my heart to have made that recommendation to Mr. Spence, you know, to say, look, it's not in our interests. But looking at it from a cold strategic point of view, you know, you shouldn't be giving security guarantees to countries you cannot defend, and putting the American people at risk, you know, by creating tripwires for a nuclear war, you know, because that's the only way that we could possibly, you know, defend those countries, defend them, save them by destroying them, basically. You know, it just didn't make sense. I remember that conversation, and you know, Mr. Spence's Chairman Spence, he agreed, he understood, he agreed with me, but he basically said, you know, Peter, you know, it's just too late. You know, the politics of it, there was so much momentum behind this idea, you know, that America was, this was going to be the new American century. You know, it was at the time of when we thought, that end of history book, you know, had been published around that time, which was, you know, the long struggle between freedom and tyranny is over. The United States has won. You know,
when was this?
Free political and economic systems are going to dominate the world, are going to be adopted voluntarily by countries all over the world. And Washington believed that. Most of Washington believed that. And there was just so much political momentum behind this idea of expanding NATO into Eastern Europe that it couldn't be stopped. So I hope we don't regret that. Anyway, we might end up regretting it as soon as tomorrow.
Well, so there's no room for common sense. I mean, why would you go forward with something that you have grave reservations about? I mean, I don't believe in momentum, you know, because momentum can be changed. Momentum can be stopped. Policies can be changed. Treaties can be abdicated. You know, Trump came in and got rid of a bunch of different treaties, you know, the Paris Accords, you know, various other things. And we're just not going to do that. And he went and said, you're going to pay your fair share. We're not going to defend you. So it can be done. The question is always, is if it's possible, then it becomes a question of willpower. If it's impossible, that's different. If legal requirements or things like that or something else. But as long as it's possible within the realm of the possible, then it's only a matter of willpower. And that's the real question. Do you have the willpower to change your mind or change things? Or are you so caught up in the momentum? You know, it's like COVID. Well, we've got a lockdown. We've got to wear masks. We've got to support, you know, public policy. We're all in this together. Right. I don't believe it.
Well, everything seems possible. You know, when you're talking on the radio and you're discussing these things in theory. But it's another thing. I mean, a momentum is a real thing. You know, it's another thing when you're somebody like the chairman of the Armed Services Committee and you have to calculate, you know, the political realities of, am I going to win if I go up against everybody else, the Department of Defense, the State Department, the White House, the Senate Armed Services Committee? It's just going to be a slaughter. You're not going to win, you know? And that's going to hurt you on other issues. You end up having to make political calculations about, is this a fight that I can win? And if I, even if I lose, is it a fight that's going to be worth, you know, destroying my influence to achieve other good things that I might be able to accomplish?
No, that's true. I mean, I understand those political calculations. I just, you know, I mean, my personal philosophy is if it's the right thing to do, then it's the right thing to do. And you do it, you give it your best effort. And if you don't make it, then that's okay. But I don't have those same political considerations. That's why I'll never run for office. I don't want to be in a position where I have to compromise what I'm doing. You know, I've written two bills for the Florida State Legislative, special legislative session. I'm going to be talking to folks after the show that are going up there. I presented them in a rally in Pensacola on Tuesday. And, you know, I think we're writing better stuff than the governor and the legislature are going to come out with. I just have to find a way to get them out there and into the media and into people's hands so they can actually read and go, oh, you mean we can do this? Yeah, you can. That's why I wrote the bills. So, you know me, I'm always, you know, pushing I'm creating my own envelope. I'm not pushing it. You know, I make my own, but that's interesting. Anyway, I don't want to take away from
I did do when I was on the Armed Services Committee, I did do the Greg Penglis thing. And, you know, I mean, and I spoke truth to power. I went all the way up to Chairman Spence. Mm-hmm. Every memo I wrote on this, we had hearings on this, and I wrote the memo warning against, you know, what the consequences would be, you know, and members read that. A lot of them understood it, but in the end, you know, it was that it just seemed like the irresistible tide of all the bureaucratic political interests, the press, even the Washington Post, everybody wanted it, you know, and it was impossible to stop, but at least I didn't know how to stop it. I did my duty. I told the truth. I gave my professional opinion on it, and
that's all
you know.
Do.
And here we are.
Unless you're the Armed Services Committee Chair, okay. Well, we got about 25 minutes left. Where would you like to take us? Because I could ask you a million questions
China.
And everything so far.
Let's talk about China.
This
dramatic thing
please.
That's happened in terms of the Biden intelligence community, basically being forced to change its estimate on the number of nuclear weapons they think China's going to have by the year 2030. You know, the Biden administration has had a really curious record when it comes to the Chinese nuclear threat. For years and years, the estimate on China's number of nuclear weapons, the so-called mainstream estimate, the number that the press has used, that academia has used, is about 300 weapons, that China has had about 300 nuclear weapons. When Biden came into office, his intelligence community lowered that estimate to 200 nuclear weapons. And even the anti-nuclear left-wing Union of Concerned Scientists criticized the Biden administration for lowballing the number and said that that estimate was too low. Mm-hmm. Well, now they've had to, and the Biden intelligence community was estimating that China would have 400 nuclear weapons about, you know, 9 years from now. By 2030, they would have 400 nuclear weapons. So they would have doubled the number of their nuclear weapons, but they would still be, you know, greatly inferior to us in terms of the number of their nuclear weapons. That was the Biden administration's position. Now, within the past couple of weeks, they were surprised by the discovery of these missile silos that are being built by China. You know, 350, 400 missile silos out in the desert being rapidly built. And they upped their estimate and said, well, now we admit that they're going to have 1,000 nuclear weapons by the year 2030. And which is the same thing as admitting that their original estimate was off by 150%, okay? And I've just written an article, you know, that will soon be published. And I've been surprised that my fellow conservatives and my fellow realists have sort of celebrated that and saying, oh, look, the establishment is coming along with us, and they're recognizing that the China threat, you know, is much more serious than the 200 to 400 nuclear weapons. And now they've got the estimate up to 1,000 nuclear weapons by the year 2030. And I think that we're falling for a trap here, you know, that the Biden intelligence community, has set or people are failing to understand that this estimate is driven by a political agenda, and it's not a realistic assessment. You know, if you want to look at what a realistic assessment is, basically I'm arguing in this article that instead of 1,000 weapons, that China is more likely to have 4,000 weapons by the year 2030, and so that even the current estimate is too low, and that they're off by 400%, even with their heightened current estimate. Now, why is that? And that's because, as we've actually talked about on your show before.
Yes, I remember, yeah.
You know, we know for sure they're building 350 ICBM silos. And we know from Global Times and other open sources, Global Times is a mouthpiece for the Chinese Communist Party, that they're talking about deploying large numbers of their best ICBM, which is the DF-41, which has got 10 warheads. It's a MIRVed ICBM. It's got 10 warheads. So, you know, they've already got 50 DF-41s on mobile launchers. So that's 500 warheads right there. And if they put DF-41s in these silos, which is what Global Times and others are talking about, I mean, why would you put an inferior missile? You're going to put your best missile in these silos. You know, and it's the DF-41, and they've even said so, that that's what they plan to do. So that's another 3,500 weapons that they will have just on the DF-41 ICBM alone. So the 500 plus 3,500 is 4,000 weapons before the year 2030. These silos are going to be completed well before the year 2030. And while they're building these silos, they're also building new strategic bombers, they're deploying new ballistic missile submarines and sub-launch ballistic missiles. So there's going to be additional nuclear weapons on the other legs of the Chinese triad, the strategic bomber force and their ballistic missile submarine force. So they could well have over 4,000 nuclear weapons, you know, if you count the kind of delivery capabilities that they're building by the year 2030. And we know what the delivery capabilities of these systems are because we see them being tested. We see them carrying MIRVs, you know. So that's not a very ambiguous thing. We know they're going to have the capability to deliver 4,000 weapons or more.
They're not hiding it.
By the year 2030. So how does the Biden administration and the Biden intelligence community and the anti-nuclear pro-China lobby managed to come up with 1,000 weapons for China by the year 2030? And
They're probably told to say it by China. I mean, given the corruption and given
maybe so. That may be the political motive because China Joe may be owned by China. I mean, it was a very strange thing that the Biden administration started off by lowering the estimated number of nuclear weapons that China has. But the technical rationalization for their 1,000 warhead estimate is they claim that they can calculate the number of pits, of nuclear weapon pits, that China is going to be able to make by the year 2030 by calculating their ability to produce weapons-grade plutonium and weapons-grade uranium. And so by their math, they say, well, China can only make enough pits for 1,000 weapons by the year 2030.
Unless Iran, they're paying Iran to make them for them. I mean, these people have they can't see beyond their own narrow little vision. They only look at things in one dimension. You know, look at things in like five dimensions. You know, you've got to think about all the other possibilities and look at the different angles and different methods. If you put yourself in China's place, if you were in China's place and you wanted to have more pits and more plutonium and you can only make so much, the first thing you would do is make alliances or buy it from somebody else.
This is no-brainer stuff. They're wrong, you know, about their assertion that we know how much plutonium and uranium China can make. The intelligence on how many weapons can be delivered by their delivery vehicles is much clearer than our intelligence on and our ability to calculate how much weapons-grade plutonium and uranium they can make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you tweak a few variables, you know, you can come up with radically different answers about how much plutonium and uranium that they make. We also don't know, you know, that they've probably hidden. They've also probably got clandestine capabilities. These facilities are extremely important. You know, they're probably going to put some underground like Russia has at Krasnoyarsk 26. You know, Russia hid from us their plutonium and uranium production capabilities in an underground city called Krasnoyarsk 26. We just recently discovered that North Korea has got clandestine uranium enrichment facilities at Kaesong. And the intelligence community was taken by surprise when they discovered that China is building new breeder reactors. They're going to have two new breeder reactors coming online by 2023, which can make vast amounts of plutonium. So the premise that we know how much plutonium and uranium that they're going to be making is just BS. I mean, this is they're playing on the illusion that most Americans have that our intelligence is perfect on all these issues when it is far from perfect. And it's mostly guesswork. And I think it's intellectually dishonest. You know, they're going in there trying to impress people by saying, we know how much they can do this. And, they're the intelligence community. They must know. But they're deliberately lowballing the estimates by tweaking the variables so that they can come up with the smallest number of pits possible so that they can claim that China will only have 1,000 weapons by 2030. Another thing where this analysis falls down, these are just illustrations of a very complicated, you know, intelligence process. But another thing that can drive your estimate of how many plutonium pits can be manufactured is your assessment about, well, how much enriched plutonium or uranium do you need to make a pit? The Union of Concerned Scientists, for example, and I suspect the intelligence community is using the same math that UCS assumes that they need 5 to 8 kilograms, you know, of plutonium or enriched uranium, you know, and that goes back to our Nagasaki bomb, you know, which had 5 kilograms of plutonium back in 1945 in its core. Our nuclear weapons technology for the whole world has gone a long way since 1945, and a good designer, you know, can make a plutonium pit with 1 kilogram. So that means that just right there, you know, that if the Chinese have good weapon designers, and I'm sure they do, then the number of pits they can make just based on that particular variable is 5 to 8 times greater than what the Union of Concerned Scientists and probably our own intelligence community is estimating.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, here's the thing, too. We've got Hillary Clinton sold off 20% of our uranium to Russia. And who's to say a lot of that isn't ending up in China, too? I've got a big question for you. I don't know if you want to take it on this week or next week, but I'm curious what you know of who makes these decisions in China as to how many nuclear weapons they're going to have. Do they have a huge intelligence secret bureau? Do they have policy people? Do the generals do it? Is it a political consideration? Do they have the Department of Nuclear Weapons? How does China make the decisions for the arms that they have, and how do they make their defense policy? Where is that all centered?
Well, focusing on nuclear weapons and not on their whole defense policy, as with us, it's both political and military. China's version of STRATCOM is the PLA Strategic Rocket Forces, and do calculations about, well, if we fight a nuclear war, you know, how many weapons do we need and what kinds of systems do we need in order to achieve our damage goals against adversaries in various scenarios? You know, and that's going to drive their recommendation, you know, to the political leadership, the Communist Party, you know, about what they need. And since China is a military dictatorship, You know, like all totalitarian states, the military you almost always gets what it wants. And
okay,
you know, so basically, they, and that's the way it works in Russia too. You know, they pretty much get what they want, and they don't have any anti-nuclear activists or any representative Adam Smiths. Yeah, nobody there who's, you know, in their country to mm-hmm. to oppose these things. You know,
okay.
So the so yeah, there's political calculations that also go into it from the Communist Party. You know, but it's not like our system where you have a, you know, wide range of political views on whether nuclear weapons are good or bad or anything like that. China sees Chinese nuclear weapons as very good, you know, and they haven't built up in the past, probably because for a couple of reasons, you know, because they hadn't achieved the technological level that they needed so that they could defeat the United States, outcompete us. And they were concerned that if they started building up too early, you know, that we might preempt them or something like that before they were ready to deter us. That's why I think that now it's just very interesting that once they got the DF-41, which is superior to any ICBM or SLBM, any nuclear weapon we've got on our side, as soon as they got that missile, they started building all these silos out there to have a rapid expansion of this force now that they've got a technologically superior weapon that they can deploy. And they're losing no time. For decades, they've been trying to lure us into adopting a minimum deterrence posture, and so has the arms control community, frankly. I mean, the pro-China lobby, this is getting to the question about, well, why does our intelligence community want us to believe that China will only have 1,000 weapons by 2030? And by the way, yeah. I have to make this point. I have to make this point. You know, that's a big ask. That's a big ask for them. If people think about it, and I'm just amazed how people haven't thought about it, which is why I wrote this article. You know, we know that China is developing the capability to deliver 4,000 nuclear weapons by 2030, okay?
Right.
But they want us to believe that they won't have more than 1,000 weapons by 2030 because of the fuzzy math on how many pits can they make. That just doesn't make any sense. You know, it doesn't make any sense that China would so overinvest, you know, and have four times the delivery capability for nuclear weapons when it couldn't arm those missiles and bombers and sub-launch and submarines with weapons so that they could get up to the 4,000 level. You know, I think the indicator that we should be looking at for the future nuclear threat from China is their delivery capability, not the fuzzy math on plutonium pit production. But I think it's on purpose. It's not that the intelligence community is doesn't know that. It's that we've got the pro-China lobby and the anti-nuclear activists and the arms control mentality inside of our intelligence community. And they have a political agenda, you know, that they're trying to sell, which is why they're trying to keep the estimate down on the China nuclear threat.
Yeah, who are they trying to convince? You know, because most people, they don't know the numbers. They don't know the things that we talk about in terms of details. So who's the intelligence community talking to? They're not talking to the average American. The average American is worried about COVID and their job and the economy and, you know, and getting to work and heating their house this winter because inflation sucks. That's what the average American is worrying about. So who's this intelligence community of ours actually talking to? Themselves?
Talking to the White House. They're talking to the White House and they're talking to Congress. And, you know, they don't want the response would be enormously different. The 1,000 weapons is kind of a magic number, okay, for the arms control.
1,000 points of light,
1,000
weapons, you know, 1,000-year history.
Yeah, community.
Yeah, it's one of those numbers, yeah.
Right. If you can keep the numbers down, it serves the interests of the pro-China lobby, which is everywhere in Washington, by the way. I'm not talking about some Chinese people that go and lobby the Pentagon. You know,
it's an industry.
This is people in the State Department, You know, people in the intelligence community, you know, people in industry, yes, you know, people in Congress, everybody who has participated in the pro-China policies that we've been following for decades, you know, that have done so much damage to the United States, these people haven't given up on the idea that they were right and that we should continue to be following a pro-China policy, and that ultimately that convergence, they've been promising us for decades that convergence will happen between China and the United States.
What does that
mean? One of the chief examples of convergence is that China is not a nuclear threat to the United States. It's not a growing existential nuclear threat to the United States. And so the rise of the China nuclear threat is an enormous threat to this worldview. And so they want to do everything possible to tamp it down, you know, to keep it within reasonable limits so that they can continue to make the pro-China case, all right?
They can lie. That's what they're doing. They're lying.
Yeah, exactly. 1,000 weapons does that for them because they can still argue that the United States has more nuclear weapons than China, and therefore we're responsible for this arms racing that's going on, and we haven't done enough to stop the nuclear arms race. So it's on the United States to make concessions. And that's why the 1,000 weapons is really an interesting number.
Hmm.
Because in the goal of the arms control community, you know, the next thing they wanted to sell the Pentagon on and Washington on is lowering the number of our nuclear weapons to 1,000. You know, we're right now at 1,400 nuclear weapons. And so we'd say, well, we can come down another, you know, the fewer nuclear weapons there are, the safer the whole world is. So let's take this modest step, and the U.S. should go down to 1,000 weapons. In other words, it fits into this paradigm of following China's good example, you know.
Yeah,
and they can say, oh, it's not too late to follow China's good example. China's only building up to 1,000 weapons. So let's meet them. Let's go down, meet the Chinese by building down to 1,000 weapons. And we'll have done our duty to arrest the nuclear arms race between the sides. That, by the way, is also, they use that rationale in trying to push no first use, the nuclear no first use policy. You know, mm-hmm. China has this phony nuclear no first use policy that they have alleged to be following for decades. And the arms control community and the anti-nuclear zealots have been urging the United States to follow China's good example. And the U.S. should adopt a nuclear no-first-use policy. And the Biden administration is seriously considering both of these things. In fact, the Biden administration is not only considering nuclear no-first-use, but possibly going down way below 1,000 weapons if they listen to, you know, the anti-nuclear people within their administration. And this is insane and suicidal when China is actually building toward 4,000 nuclear weapons, which is building toward global domination. You know, 4,000 nuclear weapons.
So that's what
we
need to talk
about. 10 times as many weapons as we have on our ICBM force, and it's almost 3 times as many nuclear weapons as we have on our whole nuclear triad, all the ICBMs, all the bombers and SLBMs. That's almost 3 times as many. I mean, that's clearly a nuclear war winning, nuclear blackmail. It's exactly the same kind of thing that Russia is doing. China's following in Russia's footsteps, you know, to try to achieve global domination by building up such an intimidating force, nuclear force, that it's going to change the world order, perhaps without war.
Yeah, I still think they're building up against each other. One of the things, I've got some bigger questions that I think we need to take up in coming weeks. And the first thing I was thinking of as we were talking and this is why I asked you about the Chinese military policy. Where does it come from? How is it derived? What are their goals? We need to sort of analyze that more. But I'm wondering if China, being a dictatorship, if the goals of their military are more to maintain the power of the Chinese Communist Party or the power of China. And there's a difference between those, a huge difference, because, you know, in other words, what the people of China, they're just, you know, trying to survive a totalitarian government. But maybe in the last 2 minutes, we can kind of start on that. And I want to explore this more because I want to understand China more and see if we can get the motivations. You know, we've got the numbers. Let's get beyond the numbers and let's see what motivates people to do what they're doing. We know what our folks are motivated by. It's a completely mistaken view of peace, and they're idiots, and they're convincing themselves. They come up with their conclusions and then, you know, desperately try to find evidence and a policy to match their conclusions. But we haven't got 90 seconds left. I just got the warning. But what motivates China? Is it more maintaining the power of the Communist Party or maintaining a greater China? And we might have to take that up next week. What do you think?
Well, the short answer is it's both, you know, because the Communist Party of China sees itself as representing China, the Chinese people, the traditional China. And they don't see any contradiction between the future of China and the future of the interests of the party. That's how they see it.
Hmm. That is a short answer. You know, people think, okay, well, let's I'm curious about that, and I think I want to explore more about what Russia and China might be doing to each other. But we've got some just real idiots, you know, that are in there. And every time you see Biden,
and I
intelligence
agree with you,
community,
I think China is actually arms racing with Russia. I think Russia and China already see us as sort of on the ash heap of history. And they've really got their eye on each other at this point, which is why they're both going gangbusters, building up nuclear weapons.
See, if they don't see us as a threat, then they have to be building for something. I agree with you absolutely. I want to explore that more because there was the big joke, you know, back, I guess, in the 60s and 70s. It was like this James Bond film. We only have about 30 seconds left. And it had this sun-powered satellite laser beam that blew up a bunch of Chinese missiles so that they'd attack Russia, and blew up a bunch of Russian missiles so they'd attack China. And they were trying to start a war between Russia and China. And we always thought of them as adversaries. That seems to have gotten lost in the debate somewhere, but I think it's really critical to take up the history of Russia and China. Maybe we can do that next week. That might be something interesting if you're interested in covering that. But we have to go now, though, to let you conclude, and then we'll pick it up again tomorrow.
No, I do think that's an interesting. I think the only thing that's keeping their alliance going is the continued existence of the United States. You know, they haven't knocked us off yet, but I think they're so confident that they'll be able to.
But they could.
They're building up because they know the war after the United States is going to be between each other.
Yeah, it's like Russia and Nazi Germany. Stalinist Russia and Nazi Germany. You know, who's the biggest leftist on the block? Thank you, sir, for another fascinating discussion. We have to leave now. We'll pick it up tomorrow, and I'll be talking about the rally that's going on in Tallahassee tomorrow. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And if you want to participate in our legislative stuff, that's at www.writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS. Back tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock Central, 6 o'clock Eastern. Excuse me, start again. 7 Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 Pacific. And we'll do it again tomorrow. Thank you all very much.